Okay. Ooh. Yeah, try not to do that. And stay tuned right after this for the Peter B. Collins Show coming up next after the CBS News.
Para bailar, danço bolero, danço samba, danço cha-cha-cha. Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. It could be the first video from Osama bin Laden in 3 years. Now, while the experts analyze its authenticity, the analysts break down what it says. Michael Scheuer, formerly with the CIA, currently with CBS News.
He says at one point, we're going to continue this war against you until you stop these policies. So I think it's not a fist-slamming on the desk threat, but it's a very clear threat to the United States.
In the tape, Americans are urged to embrace Islam. White House says First Lady Laura Bush will undergo elective surgery tomorrow to relieve pressure on the pinched nerves in her neck. The elective outpatient procedure is said to be minimally invasive. 250-point drop of the Dow today. What happened? CBS's Alexis Christophorus pins it on today's downer jobs report.
The stock market was slammed by this dismal jobs report because now it raises worries that the problems we saw in the housing market and the credit markets are spreading to the rest of the economy.
More evidence of those problems. Troubled mortgage lender Countrywide Financial now says it will cut as many as 12,000 jobs. Today, the Dow losing 250 points to end at 13,113, a drop of nearly 2% for the week. NASDAQ off 48.5%. The S&P 500 dropping 25 points. Shocking developments in the case of a missing 4-year-old British girl. Madeline McCann disappeared from a resort in southern Portugal May 3rd. No sign of her, no ransom demand, nothing, until some bloodstains were found, and now the mother is named a suspect.
From the McCann's friends and family, outrage that the victims now seem to be seen as perpetrators.
These sort of implications cannot help a family that's going through a loss like this.
Jerry McCann's brother, John McCann. Here in Britain, there is broad public support for the McCann's, deep skepticism about the Portuguese police. This despite the fact that British forensic experts have been aiding the investigation. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
Doris Anderson is 76. She and her husband went hunting 2 weeks ago. He came down the rugged Oregon mountain. She did not. Until today. Memorial service planned for this weekend canceled. Doris is alive and well. Just in time for the end of summer vacation. Good news from CBS's John Harchie for those awaiting a passport.
The State Department says it's caught up. With hundreds of new hires and temporary employee transfers, the massive backlog in passport applications has been cleared. Processing should take the normal time. That's about 6 to 8 weeks for normal service, or 3 weeks if you pay $60 extra for expedited service. The government was swamped with applications earlier this year. There were long lines at processing centers, and it took months to get a passport, meaning some had to delay traveling abroad.
Author Madeline L'Engle died at a nursing home in Litchfield, Connecticut. She was 88. L'Engle's novel, A Wrinkle in Time, enjoyed by generations. Her granddaughter has fond memories.
She felt herself to be terrifically privileged to have been able to touch so many lives through her work.
This is CBS News.
Erectile dysfunction isn't something you want to sing about, but you should talk to your doctor about it. I did, and so have millions of others. In fact, Viagra, also called Sildenafil Citrate, has already helped over 17 million men with ED. Ask your doctor if Viagra's right for you. America's most prescribed ED treatment, more satisfying sexual experiences with my partner. Now that's worth singing about. Viva
Viagra! Ask your doctor if your heart is healthy enough for sex. Don't take Viagra if you take nitrates for chest pain, as it may cause an unsafe drop in blood pressure. Side effects may include headache, flushing, upset stomach, and abnormal vision. To avoid long-term injuries, stop taking Viagra and call your doctor right away if you experience a sudden decrease in vision or an erection lasting longer than 4 hours. Always remember to protect yourself and your partner against STDs.
To learn more, see our ad in Golf Magazine. Call 1-888-4-VIAGRA or visit Viagra.com today.
There are long lines of mourners in the hometown of Luciano Pavarotti. CBS's Sabina Castelfranco is there.
Bulgarian soprano Raina Kabaivanska says Pavarotti's death is a huge loss to the world of opera. She describes his voice.
He had an incredible unique color. of velvet, of clair of moon. This voice came from the heaven.
Kabaivanska performed Tosca with Pavarotti at La Scala Theatre in Milan more than 20 years ago. Sabina Castelfranco, CBS News, Modena.
Pavarotti, dead. He is already worth millions, but Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner also on a lucky lottery streak. His latest win, $1,000 in the Wisconsin lottery last week. The lucky lawmaker also won $1,000 last spring and grabbed $250,000 last year. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
What are you really getting in most burger joints? Could it be a bigger waistline and a lack of energy, too? Instead of greasy fast food, how about great flavor without the flab and fat? Try the new Subway Fresh Fit Meal that fits into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle. Now with more tasty choices like new hearty wheat bread that's a good source of fiber and Gannon low-fat yogurt. The new Subway Fresh Fit Meal. Subway. Eat fresh.
Subway Fresh Fit Meals are not a diet program.
Reason number 36 to switch to Geico. Because fishing takes you to your favorite place on Earth. If you love boating, you need to call Geico. Because now Geico can help insure all the stuff that moves you, including boats. Great rates, great coverage, and personal service 24/7. Call anytime, 1-800-442-9253, or visit geico.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
And here in Frisco, the city of St. Francis, we are kind of crazy about the peace thing, too. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show, another fresh edition originating from the left coast. We've got a lot to talk about. And one of the things we do on this program is we turn to people who know more than the host about the subject area. So, for example, in a moment, we're going to talk about Iran with an actual Iranian, Trita Parsi, who is well-versed on the issues. And then we're going to talk to a gentleman from Iraq later this hour. Ra'ed Jarar returns to our program. He's a consultant to the American Friends Service Committee and outspoken on the issues related to the U.S. occupation of Iraq. And to continue in that vein, expertise will come next hour from Dr. David Kearns. He's a former chief medical officer at one of the largest public health facilities in California and is now a professor of medicine at Stanford University's medical school. He's highly critical of our for-profit medical delivery system, and you're going to hear all about it. We'll be taking lots of your calls in the second hour, too. And as usual, our expert on election protection and the ups and downs of the Holt bill for election reform, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com will be with us in our third and final hour today. And there are developments, I'll just update you, that currently H.R. 811 is stuck in the Rules Committee of the House, and they did not meet to take any action on it today. So we will get more on that issue from Brad Friedman coming up a little bit later. You're invited to join this conversation whenever you like. And we pay for the call. It's toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. In numbers, that's 888-573-8372. And you can always email me 24/7, peter at peterbcollins.com. Trita Parsi is a very interesting man. He's got more degrees than I'll ever think about. And he served as an advisor on Capitol Hill. And he has just published a book that I haven't read yet called Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Iran, Israel, and the United States. Trita Parsi, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you for having me again.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, sir. And I'll just mention that one of your degrees comes from Johns Hopkins and the School of Advanced International Studies. And my sweet mother picked up a master's degree from there, I think, in 1959.
Fantastic.
It is a great institution.
It is.
I am pleased that you could join us today because I have appreciated your commentary when you've been on the program in the past, and we appear to be reaching another possible crisis point between the United States and Iran. And as I mentioned, you're a native of Iran, then you moved to Sweden, and then you came to the United States. But you've been studying the Middle East for 10 or 15 years now, and you've traveled extensively in both Israel and Iran. And Israel, of course, is a key factor and a key player in the U.S. posture toward Iran. So first up, Dr. Parsi, if you would, tell me what you view as the current status of U.S. war plans or military preparedness toward Iran, and do you think that the Bush administration is seeking a provocative moment so that they can launch military action?
I think we're facing a very, very grave situation right now. I think tensions are extremely high. And whether the intent from the Bush administration is to start a conflict or not, in this circumstance, with these type of tensions, the latest comments that the president made certainly did not help reduce the tensions. On the contrary, when you mix that type of a rhetoric with the existing tensions, then you get a very, very explosive mix. And as a result, I think the risk for a military conflict between the United States and Iran, whether intentionally sparked or not, remains quite high.
And our level of preparedness, I've seen emails and blog items and also reports from the British media that indicate that we have put the finishing touches on assault plans, and they include attacks on more than 3,000 different sites that are scheduled to take place in a very short window, a shock and awe kind of window.
I personally believe that reports about this type of planning is, A, not something necessarily new, and, B, not something that necessarily means that there is an intent to do it. There's plans for a lot of things. I'm far more concerned about how posturing accidentally can lead to a conflict that may not have been the thing that one was seeking. And I'm not trying to say that the Bush administration is pursuing a balanced policy or anything of that sort. I'm just saying that at some point, guessing about intentions does not become very useful anymore, particularly when you're in an explosive situation as we are in today. Now, the risk for a mistake is probably much, much higher than the risk that there is an intent for conflict.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do understand that there is a vigorous debate underway inside the Bush administration, and again, some of this is speculation, some of it is leaks, but it appears that Dick Cheney is holding firm, but that he has had to argue with Secretary Rice, and apparently Robert Gates, the new Secretary of Defense, seems to be reluctant to embrace this more aggressive posture toward Iran.
Definitely. I mean, there is a power struggle going on within the White House. And I think it's quite clear now that the Vice President's office has been opposing the idea of pursuing diplomacy with Iran. And they are seeking every opportunity to be able to put an end to the very half-hearted attempts at diplomacy that so far have been pursued. What I describe in the book is one of these other aspects that we have been quite concerned about and quite vocal about is the Israeli factor in this equation. We hear the president and others saying that they're going to protect Israel and that the Iranian government is dead set on destroying that country. The reality is quite different. I spent a lot of time both in Iran and in Israel interviewing the top leadership about the nature of their relations, how their decisions were made, what the reason was, and when you start scratching the surface, you do see that there is a very fundamentally realist conflict taking place between these two countries that have very little to do with ideology, and as a result, actually is quite solvable. But it's not going to be able to be solved unless there is a major push for diplomacy.
Now, you mentioned Israel, and I'd like you to give the opportunity here to explain to our listeners the linkage between U.S. foreign policy toward Iran and the interests of Israel. And this came up this week in the Republican, quote-unquote, debate, the joint appearance of the candidates. And Ron Paul, who's a bit of a wild card, I think blurted out the truth. And he stated that the U.S. is pursuing a policy toward Iran that is in the best interest of Israel. And again, he blurted out the truth that is often, politely understated or not stated at all, that Israel has several hundred nuclear missiles, and Israel is in a position to take care of its issues with Iran on its own.
clearly the Israelis do have an ability to be able to face the Iranians, mindful of the fact that the Iranians don't have a nuclear weapon. And if they have a nuclear weapons program, which is a question mark, but if they do, they probably need another 5 years to build the first one while Israel still sits on 200. Beyond that, the Israelis have a second strike capability, which means that even if the Iranians were to attack, Israel can still strike back because it has many of its nuclear warheads on submarines that the Iranians never would be able to locate and destroy. The Israelis have had a tremendous influence on shaping U.S. foreign policy vis-a-vis Iran, particularly after 1993. It was at a time in which the Israelis started to become very concerned that if the United States and Iran were to negotiate with each other, they would find a deal that would not be beneficial to Israel. Israel's security interests would basically be betrayed by the United States in such a negotiation, and as a result, it was much better to make sure that obstacles were created so that negotiations never could be reached. That is basically the posture that the Israelis and pro-Israeli groups in Washington have taken since the mid-1990s, and the motivation for that was partly because they were afraid of a U.S.-Iran deal, but also because they believe that more pressure and a more confrontational approach would force the Iranians to change their policies vis-a-vis Israel, which included Iranian sponsorship of terrorism. I think 15 years later, we can look back and we can draw the conclusion that that strategy has not been successful. It's not been Israel's own interest because the absence of negotiation is increasing the risk for a catastrophic war, a catastrophic war that would be equally devastating to Israel itself. So you are hearing voices in Israel that are talking about the necessity of being able to find some diplomatic outreach to Iran, or at least through the United States and Iran.
We're talking with Dr. Trita Parsi here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B. His new book is called Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States. And Dr. Parsi, many critics from the left have noted that the legislation the Democrats were working on related to the supplemental defense appropriation for Iraq this spring, and they caved and gave the president just about everything he wanted by Memorial Day. In the original bill was language that explicitly said that the U.S. could not assault, launch a military assault on Iran without congressional approval. And many people note that shortly after the AIPAC conference, that bill was amended or the language was deleted related to Iran. What is your take on the level of influence that AIPAC has, and was there a direct linkage between the AIPAC conference and the removal of that particular clause?
Well, I saw that process pretty close, at close hand, and there's no question about it, and AIPAC people have also quietly admitted that they were the ones who pulled out that provision from the bill that really didn't change much. It did send a signal to the White House that you can't just go and start another war. And AIPAC pulled it out. And the motivation was that it would send a signal to the Iranians that there's a difference between Congress and the president on how to deal with Iran. Obviously, a lot of Democrats were absolutely livid, and they were extremely disappointed with the speaker for permitting that provision of the bill to be pulled out. But the pro-Israeli community's influence on the Democratic Party and on Congress is quite extensive, and this is one of those instances in which it showed itself.
Indeed. We're going to take a break and return with Trita Parsi. He served on Capitol Hill. He is a native of Iran, and he has a lot of great information and views on the situation between the U.S. and Iran. Again, his new book is called Treacherous Alliance. It's in hardcover from Yale University Press. More coming up in a moment. You can call in at 888-5-PETER-B. You're listening to The Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Beyond Wheat Artisan Bakery, right here in Monterey, brings you sugar-free and gluten-free muffins and cakes that are all natural, with organic ingredients and loaded with super grain nutrition. Find Beyond Wheat at Cornucopia Natural Foods Carmel, Carmel Valley Market, and Staff of Life and New Leaf Markets in Santa Cruz. Be sure to try Beyond Wheat for a truly special treat. created to keep you happy and totally guilt-free. You'll be so glad you did.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hi, this is J.R. Medina, and I want to thank KRXA and its listeners for supporting my store, PG Liquors. My son-in-law, Chad, and I truly appreciate the wonderful positive response that we have received to our advertising campaign on this station. We urge other business people in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties who want to increase their business at a reasonable cost to call KRXA's sales manager, Larry Rathall, at 394-5792. KRXA provides the best advertising value that I have found for businesses like mine. Call Larry at 394-KRXA.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 23 minutes after the hour. My guest is Dr. Trita Parsi, the author of Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States. And as we mentioned, he served on Capitol Hill for many years and was an aide to Congressman Bob Ney, who was a good guy on Middle East issues, certainly very well informed, and unfortunately is behind bars these days. And Trita Parsi, let's talk about the domestic politics here. We touched on the influence of Israel in AIPAC and the way the Democrats did remove the clause that would have required the White House to get congressional approval for an assault on Iran. And we see that some Democrats seem to have pretty hawkish positions, including John Edwards, one of the Democratic candidates for president. And I'm just curious how you see the byplay between Democrats and Republicans and how it affects Cheney and Bush's attitudes toward engaging in a conflict with Iran.
Well, I have to be very frank here. I actually am of the belief that even if you change the administration, the likelihood of that decisively changing the risk for war is actually not that great, because Iran and the United States currently are on a trajectory towards conflict, and that can only be changed through a robust shift towards diplomacy. And some of the people in the Democratic foreign policy establishment that are likely people will be back in the next Democratic administration, regardless of who wins, are the very same people that during the Clinton years actually put in place many of these obstacles towards diplomacy with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's just a change in administration that's going to be sufficient to be able to really change this equation. It needs to be a paradigm shift.
Yeah.
And I have so far not seen enough to make me confident that the next administration, Republican or Democrat, is fully recognizing the necessity of a paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
It may be coming. I don't want to say that it's impossible. I've seen some of the presidential candidates speaking more about it than others, but it's not fully there. It's not an idea that is just waiting to be implemented.
And what is the impact of the recent extension and enhancement of arms deals and U.S. Subsidies to Egypt, Israel, and Saudi Arabia? How does this change the balance of power or the balance of terror vis-a-vis Iran?
It further pushes the United States into a position in the Middle East that has proven to be absolutely problematic, not only for the U.S., but also the region as a whole. This is a region that certainly does not need more arms. It is a region that already right now is spending far more money on arms than any other region. Particularly the Arab countries of the Persian Gulf are armed to the teeth. Countries like Kuwait, that is 1/20th the size of Iran and probably 1/20th the size of Iran's population, is spending more money on arms than Iran is. And almost all of that weaponry is American weaponry. We have, instead of seeking a collective security arrangement in the Middle East and an all-inclusive security architecture, we have chosen to strike bilateral deals with specific countries and arm them to the teeth. And that's basically to pursue a policy of balance of power. And policies of balance of power tend to lead with only a couple of years in between two major wars, and that's exactly what we've seen in the Middle East. We've had wars there since 48, 56, 67, 73, 1980, 1991, 2001 and 2003, and potentially even 2007. So this paradigm of pursuing this policy of balance of power, American interest in the region, certainly not delivered.
Certainly is not delivered, is what he said there. It got muffled a little bit. And those are powerful observations with which I agree, Dr. Parsi. Finally, the release this week of an American-Iranian, Hale Esfandiari. Is that significant? She was in solitary confinement, but it doesn't appear she was tortured. And the U.S. is still holding four or five Iranians from that we took in Erbil earlier this year. Is this release significant in any way?
It's difficult to make a judgment if it's going to have major political impact, but certainly it is significant for Hale herself and the many people who know her and care a lot about her, as well as the other Iranian-Americans that the Iranian government now is about to release. I think what it may indicate is that the Iranian government realized that whatever they thought they could get out of taking these people who are American citizens and American passport holders, it really didn't yield what they were hoping for.
Right,
at some point, basically, they put an end to it. I think
Dr. Parsi, I'm sorry.
The Iranian government's treatment of their own people is absolutely horrific, and these four cases is just an example of that.
Our time is up. Dr. Parsi, thanks. We'll talk again.
Thank you so much.
Trita Parsi, the book is Treacherous Alliance.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Did you know that the average price for homes in North Monterey County is approximately $450 per square foot? Hi, I'm Anthony Castellino for Pacific Pride Homes. We really do take pride in the small number of custom homes we build every year, and the fact that we can offer state quality homes at substantially below that price. Our most recent accomplishment is located in the gated community of Hidden Woods. Conveniently located in the Sunbelt area of North Monterey County and within a short drive to Morgan Hill, Salinas, and Monterey Peninsula, this new 4-bedroom, 3.5-bath home sits on 1.65 private acres. We invite KRXA listeners to a special open house viewing on Sunday, September 9th, between 1 and 4. Stop by and you'll be amazed at the value of this beautiful new home. Visit our website at PacificPrideHomes.com for details and directions.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow, hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests, and you call in with your questions and ideas, and we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters, weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, Riley!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show, only on KRXA 540. Down in Monterey.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and we continue to bring you guests who know more than your humble host about the issues at hand. You can join in toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Joining me now is Raed Jarar. He is currently the Iraq consultant for the American Friends Service Committee. And he's been affiliated, too, with Global Exchange, based here in San Francisco. He is a native Iraqi, And he has helped us on many occasions understand what's going on there and what is at stake. Raed, welcome back to our program.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, it's nice to talk with you again. And before I get started on anything, just tell me what your reaction is to the current spin and the incredible storm of conflicting information that has descended on Washington in an effort by the Bush administration to establish that the surge, whatever that means, the surge is working.
I'm not surprised at all, in fact. This is exactly what we were expecting, and by we I mean people who live in Washington, D.C. and work on the Hill. This is what we were expecting for the last couple of months. We were expecting that the administration will try to turn this report into a circus and just confuse the hell out of everyone by bringing this conflicting information just to try to cover up the huge failure in Iraq.
Yeah. And it's dizzying because there's a GAO report. There is the General Jones Commission report. There are various leaks of the information that General Petraeus is expected to present. The president snuck into Iraq a week ago on his way to Australia, which when he got there, he thought he was in Austria. and in Anbar province, he pointedly did not go to Baghdad. In Anbar province, he tried to paint a picture that security is improving, that there is a path toward political reconciliation of the factions in Iraq. And I haven't found any of that to be credible, but our media is once again, giving you the either or. And even in presenting the Jones Commission report, they have some articles that say progress is being made, others that talk about ethnic cleansing and other sectarian violence that is, misleading when you try to add up the numbers and compare them with previous reporting periods. And the net effect is that I think the administration is on its track to confuse the American people, use disinformation to divide and conquer Democrats and any wavering Republicans on Capitol Hill.
What you're saying is exactly right. What's happening is that the administration wants to keep all the public and the Congress away from discussing the real issue, which is the political development in Iraq. There is a huge political failure in Iraq. The few Sunni and Shia and Kurdish parties who have been working with the administration are the only parties that are left in the Iraqi Council of Ministers. They are the only parties who are participating in the Iraqi government. And all of the other parties, other Sunni and Shia and secular parties who represent the majority of Iraqis, have withdrew from the government during the last month. So this is a huge failure that makes it very clear that the political process in Iraq has reached to a dead end because of the U.S. intervention and because the U.S. is taking one side, supporting one side of the political fight in Iraq against the other side. There are the Sunnis and Shia and Kurdish separatists who are being supported by this administration against other Sunni and Shia and Kurdish nationalists. So the administration tries to, confuse everyone and tries to get the debate into how many U.S. troops were killed last month. Is it three less or three more than the month before? How many, mercenaries from the Iraqi side or the American side are working and getting their salaries from taxpayers' money? How many? All of these details, how to get lost in the details and forget the major issue, the political failure that makes it very clear that this occupation cannot be won in Iraq. This is the major issue, that it's not a war, it's an occupation, and it cannot be won militarily. It must have a political solution, and this is what the administration is trying to avoid.
And Raya Girar, take a moment here to help our listeners understand how misleading the group photo op in Anbar was at the huge al-Assad airbase where the president was safely ensconced, because he tried to use that to suggest that the trade-offs we have made to work with Sunni groups and to try to reduce violence in Anbar province is, number one, something that can be replicated in other parts of Iraq, and number two, that it's in some way significant in terms of actually reducing the overall level of violence in the country?
In fact, this is not the first time that the administration repeats these lies. Some few years ago, they were saying we are having a great success in the south of Iraq, and we can repeat that success around the country. They pick which part of the country is not on fire at that particular moment and try to make a fake success out of it. What's happening in Al-Anbar, what happened when the president visited, is that he met with a very few number of tribal leaders and Iraqi mercenaries who work for the U.S. military and take money to, you know, collaborate with the military there. This doesn't prove anything on the ground. You can get mercenaries and people to collaborate with you any place on the world. These people, you know, exist in any place. But if the administration was interested in actually speaking about realities in Iraq, realities are that last week or the week before, the five major Sunni and Shia and Kurdish separatist groups supported by the administration had their first public coalition. They called it the Five-Party Manifesto. And this Sunni-Shia-Kurdish alliance is a very old alliance. It's repackaging a very old alliance to fake a political victory. But for Iraqis, they realize that there is, it doesn't mean anything to say that there is one Sunni representative and one Shia representative in a group, because there is no one representation of Sunnis and there is no one representation of Shia. The latest developments in Iraq show that there are rival Sunni groups, there are rival Shia groups, there are rival secular groups, and there is no one representative who can represent both parties. So the administration wants to keep this sectarian mist going on to fake it and say that we have one Sunni or one Shia or one secular representative and make it as if there is a national unity government, while on the ground, the reality is that these Sunnis and Shia and Kurds who are working with the administration represent a very small minority of Iraqis, and their alliances and their, you know, pictures that they take with the president don't mean anything when you compare it to the facts on the ground.
And Ra'ed Jarar, a moment ago you touched on the issue related to the money that the U.S. has spread around in Al-Anbar. And this has bought some alliances, but we have seen, particularly in Afghanistan, that you can buy some allegiance short term, but there is no guarantee that the Sunnis who we are paying and arming today will, you know, maintain the peace either when the U.S. leaves or even before. And it also creates a backlash that directly confronts our hand-picked Maliki government. And so we're working at cross purposes, and the Bush administration is trying to take the limited gains or limited pacification that we've seen in Anbar and project it over the rest of the country in an effort to confuse and, I believe, deceive the American people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, these very small lies that get amplified and, you know, they make victories out of them. Even in Al-Anbar now, if you saw the situation on the ground, the real fight that is happening in Al-Anbar is between Iraqi nationalist armed groups and Al-Qaeda, you know, when it comes to fighting with Al-Qaeda. The Iraqi nationalist armed groups that are attacking Al-Qaeda are the same the Iraqi nationalist groups that are attacking the U.S. Military as well. So the enemies of the administration in Anbar are the ones who are fighting against Al-Qaeda in a real way. But when they actually have reports speaking about what's happening on the ground in Al-Anbar, they try to claim that it's their alliance, their friends who they are bribing and buying by the U.S. taxpayers' money are the ones who are fighting with Al-Qaeda, and this is not true. Because they realize, and the Iraqis realize, that the very few people who are working with the U.S. as mercenaries and private contractors, they don't represent a big number of Iraqis. They don't have enough capacity to fight against anyone in a big way. They usually just go on small missions as a backup force for the U.S. troops. So you can see that even Al-Anbar, that now they are using it as if Al-Anbar is this, you know, heaven or on earth or the stable place on Iraq.
Right.
It's very, very unstable, and there are fights in the streets. There is no electricity. There is economical collapse. It's like, it's very bad there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just to show you how bad the situation is that now Al-Anbar, which is one of the most unstable places on earth, is being used as an example of success for this administration.
Yeah, it is breathtaking. Ra'ed Jarar is with us. He is Iraq consultant for the American Friends Service Committee. He's in Washington today. If you have a question or comment, you can bring it on toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Now, Ra'ed, I take note of what Bush doesn't talk about, and what the photo op news conference dramatic sneak invasion by the president of Anbar the other day didn't reference. And one of the most critical factors in the Petraeus report and in the attempt to measure progress against shifting benchmarks is the failure of the Maliki government to disband militias. And in particular, we have Muqtada al-Sadr, who has announced that he is ordering his fighters to stand down. And one of the military experts I talked to said that this is a way to regroup, rearm, and strengthen themselves for the next phase. It's not really an effort to make peace at this time.
Yeah, there are no indicators that any militias or armed groups are laying down their arms. In fact, there are so many indicators that these militias and armed groups all around Iraq are taking more authorities and getting more power, and they are planning for the next phases. For example, something that you just mentioned earlier, the James Jones report about Iraq. It's mm-hmm. a very clear example of how the U.S. military policies are politically motivated. What's happening is that in Iraq, the Iraqi police in general is loyal to Muqtada al-Sadr and to the Mahdi army, while the Iraqi army is more loyal to Skiri and al-Dawa parties.
Mm-hmm.
So what the James Jones report was recommending is that the Iraqi police should be de-assembled because it's closer to al-Mahdi army and to Muqtada al-Sadr. And the Iraqi army should be strengthened because it's closer to the U.S. ally, Skiri.
Right.
So you can see that even these, you know, military reports that are supposed to be very, you know, neutral, non-political, and just think about Iraq as, you know, how to stabilize Iraq as a country and a nation, they are not. They're actually taking political sides. And this comes after just a few weeks of the U.S. military bombing the centers of Iraqi police in Diwaniya to take the side of the Iraqi army that was attacking Diwaniya. So you can see how messy the situation is.
Yes, it is.
It's not just about militias. It's about even the militia representation in the government itself, how the militia controls the police and how the militias control the army and how the U.S. is playing in the hands of these, you know, political fights between Shia against other Shia, Sunnis against other Sunnis, seculars against other seculars, even within the government.
And all we see...
Of course, the move that happened from Al-Sadr is not a strategic move. It's just mm-hmm. regrouping to try to, you know, plan for the next phases, how to take over the south, how to, you know, to try to maybe initiate more attacks against the coalition forces or against Syria and the Iranian intervention
and
against any other enemies that Al-Sadr group considers on their priority.
And Ra'ed, what I see is that for short-term domestic advantage, the Bush administration is putting itself on a path for long-term disaster, as if it weren't there already. We're going to take a break and return. We'll go to the phones in the next segment at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We're talking with Ra'ed Jarar. He is a Iraq consultant for the American Friends Service Committee. And you're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Grass-fed versus grain-fed. What you don't know about the meat you are eating is hurting you. U.S. livestock farming has changed drastically over the last generation, creating poisons for our land, our bodies, and the animals themselves. Join healthy, slow-food pioneer Glenn Brooks and pasture farming expert John Wood every Saturday at 10 a.m. for Food is Medicine, and find out how you can eat healthier and taste your food while helping the environment. Visits from regional chefs and recipes included right here on KRXA 540.
George Chavez of Chavez Jewelry Design specializes in recycling and restoring old jewelry, whether it's old broken jewelry or simply an item which no longer suits you. George invites you to actively participate in the creative process and to personally direct the creation of that special piece of jewelry that is truly and uniquely you. You'll find George weekdays 11 to 7 at Chavez Jewelry Design, 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville. Questions? Give George a call at 768-8004. That's 768-8004.
I told our people, get information without torture, and was assured by our Justice Department that we were not torturing.
And you need to know, they hate us because we love freedom.
Well, we've never been stay the course, George.
And I think it's important in a time of war that to the extent possible we leave politics out of the major decisions being made.
However, we will not go along with a partisan fishing expedition aimed at honorable public servants. I proposed a reasonable way to avoid an impasse.
Said was the Czech intelligence service reported after 9/11 that Atta had been in Prague on April 9th of 2001, where he allegedly met with an Iraqi intelligence official. We have never been able to confirm that, nor have we been able to knock it down. It's been pretty well confirmed that he did go to Prague and he did meet with a senior official of the Iraqi intelligence service in Czechoslovakia last April.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and your humble host continues to seek counsel and information from people who know more than he does. Case in point, Ra'ed Jarrar with us, an Iraqi who is the Iraq consultant to the American Friends Service Committee. And are you still involved with Global Exchange, or has that shifted, Ra'ed?
No, in fact, I stopped working with Global Exchange last year, I think.
Oh, okay, great. Daniel in Santa Cruz wants to join us, and you're on the air. Daniel, go ahead.
Thank you. Excellent guest you have today, Peter. Thank you very much. I want to ask your guest, Ra'ed, are you in favor of a secular Iraq?
Sorry, I didn't hear the question. Can you ask it again?
It's a simple question. Are you in favor of a secular Iraq?
In fact, I'm in favor of a secular world. I'm in favor of a secular America first, and other countries to become secular as well. I'm secular myself. I'm as a person, I'm not religious, and I'm secular.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of Iraqi religious nationalist groups, even the religious ones, the Sunni and Shia religious nationalists, are for separating the mosque from the state. They are not for having the religious imam ruling the country. Unlike the U.S. allies, the Sunni and Shia groups that are allied with the administration are for having a religious government, in fact. Me personally, I would love to have, to see a secular government in Iraq, but I realize that the majority of Iraqis and the majority of Arabs and Muslims and that region, in fact, the entire world, is turning into more, closer to religious, and people are getting more religious than the past.
But and is that because of U.S. involvement?
Hold on, Daniel. Okay, Rod, you're finished. Daniel,
become more secular.
Daniel, start your question again. Go ahead.
Yeah, would if the U.S. stepped back, would Iraq become more secular?
Well, let me just say one point before answering your question. I don't think that secular is better, despite the fact that I prefer to have secular government, and I prefer to deal with secular people. I don't think that secular is necessarily better. I think what the majority of Iraqis want to have is the better solution. If the U.S. stepped out of Iraq, Iraqis will choose what they want to have as a national government.
Well, wait a minute. Raed, are you suggesting democracy, that we actually allow the Iraqis to determine their future?
I mean, and this is the funny thing is that when the U.S. first went into Iraq, the administration didn't want to have elections. They wanted to just select a governing council, and this election should happen from D.C. And then Iraqis went into the streets, and they demanded to have elections.
Yeah.
So, Iraqis actually are for having a highly representative government that represents most of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should just believe in the people try to self-determinate their future, whether they want to live in a, French secular government or a, Iranian religious government. It's their choice, and they will take this choice after the U.S. leaves from there. The most important thing is that they live in peace and stability.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, one more.
Yes, is the legitimate government of Iraq, the former Ba'ath Party that was overthrown by the U.S., is that very secular? I know it's Sunni, but is it more secular than, say, a Shia government under the current administration?
The former Iraqi government was started as a secular government. It wasn't a Sunni government, as the Bush administration tries to claim. In fact, the best way to prove that it was a more mixed government is that the 55 deck of cards that was published by the administration and Pentagon about the most powerful 55 Iraqis, they have 36 Shia among them, and they have Sunnis and Kurds and Christians in a similar representation of them in the ground. It's not like the former Iraq government was nice. It's just that it was against all religions. It was based on secular belief.
All right, let me jump in here, because I appreciate Daniel's call, but I'm really short on time. And I want to get one final comment from you. A video is dropping today from Osama bin Laden. And in it, he kind of throws down a challenge to the United States, saying that we either get out of Iraq or he's going to turn up. He's going to escalate the violence against us. And he closed by saying that he invites Americans to convert to Islam. I wanted to get your thoughts on the latest bin Laden message.
I haven't had the chance to examine all of the video. I just saw the first 3 minutes, which are the minutes that were released by the administration earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are some questions about its authenticity, whether it's true or not. But I don't really think that Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan is really effective in what's happening in Iraq. There is a related organization in Iraq called Al-Qaeda in Iraq, or
right.
Now they call themselves
Mesopotamia.
The state of Iraq.
Yeah.
It's related to Al-Qaeda, but they are not very much in control of what's happening in Iraq.
Ra'ed Gerar, I've got to stop there. The time is up. Thank you very much. The Peter B. Collins Show.
President Bush says he listens to his military commanders. Well, Mr. President, I was one of those commanders, and you weren't listening when we warned you of the dangers we'd face invading Iraq. Now our military is overcommitted, and America is less secure. Mr. President, you're being told we need serious diplomacy, not escalation. And you're still not listening. If the President won't listen, Congress must.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com, SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day, and look at it. Sober Stones.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
With the 9/11 anniversary just days away,
it looks like Osama bin Laden in a new video. I'm Howard Arenstein in Washington.
The Dow drops nearly 250 points.
The jobs report was such a shock to the system for Wall Street that investors are now heading for the exits.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. U.S. intelligence, which somehow snared a copy of this video before it went out to the world, says there is no reason to doubt that it is Osama bin Laden. And CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein reports it appears to have been recorded recently.
Several current references in the video lead analysts to conclude it's new. The man believed to be bin Laden shows a familiarity with Washington politics, saying the vast majority of Americans elected a Democratic Congress to end the Iraq War. He says President Bush's neoconservative advisors are working with major corporations to make sure the war continues. The video is called The Solution, and that solution, he says, is to follow the teachings of Islam. Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
Where is bin Laden? CBS News national security correspondent David Martin has the latest on that.
Informed sources tell CBS News U.S. intelligence believes bin Laden is hiding out in the Chitral district of northern Pakistan. A number of reports from human sources, including some alleged sightings, have put him there.
None of them has been independently confirmed, but there are enough of them to persuade intelligence analysts that is his most likely location.
Pashtun tribes control that remote, rugged region, preventing even the Pakistani army from operating there. Now this.
So, I'm driving downtown in my Buick, and I pass by this girl. She's got on those really big sunglasses all the celebs wear. So I'm thinking, someday, she's gonna regret looking like a bug. Real style is never just a flavor of the month. It's gotta last. Like my Buick. It looks and drives beautifully. And years from now, you can bet it won't be out of style. Especially because I take such good care of it. By taking it to the professionals at my Buick dealer. Down the Goodwrench service lane.
Can't stop thinking about it.
The other day, I asked for an oil change, four tire rotation, and Goodwrench multi-point vehicle inspection, performed by a GM-trained expert. So it's Goodwrench and go to help keep my Buick running as great as it looks. And that's a picture I won't regret.
I can't stop thinking about it.
Fall is a great time to Goodwrench and go for all your maintenance needs. See your local Buick Goodwrench dealer today or log on to Goodwrench.com.
For the first time since August 2003, a Labor Department report says employers cut their payrolls last month. 4,000 jobs went away. That shook the stock market. The Dow lost 249 points to finish the week at 13,113. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus.
Our worst fears are now being realized because the consumer has been able to hold its own despite the credit and housing problems. Now that we see a weak jobs report, it's a signal the consumer may start hurting, which will hurt the overall economy.
This almost guarantees action by the Federal Reserve.
What this jobs report does is make it almost certain that the Fed is going to cut interest rates at its September 18th meeting. The question now is really by how much, a half percent or a quarter percent.
Mortgage lender Countrywide Financial has already had two rounds of job cuts and now says unless conditions improve, it will eliminate as many as 12,000 people, 20% of its workforce. Congress has voted to cut $20 billion in subsidies to banks and use the money to increase financial aid for college students. A memorial service was planned this weekend for Doris Anderson, a 76-year-old woman who disappeared in the rugged mountains of eastern Oregon while on a hunting trip with her husband. But plans changed when Anderson was found alive and in pretty good shape. Reporter Carl Harlan of CBS television affiliate KIRO says her condition surprised the search party.
She was dressed like she was really going out to the shopping mall for a day and wound up spending almost 2 weeks out in the wilderness. And this is 4,000 or 5,000 feet in elevation. They've had freezing temperatures out there. They've had rain.
Anderson's brother-in-law, Melvin, is amazed.
I thought she was gone. My wife said, no, she's alive. And my wife was right.
Anderson's hospitalized for treatment of dehydration and a hip injury. Even with the president halfway around the world, Laura Bush has a pain in the neck, and doctors will try to fix it tomorrow. The White House says the First Lady will have a minimally invasive procedure to relieve the pressure on pinched nerves in her neck. The pain kept her from going to Australia with her husband for the Asia-Pacific summit. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Erectile dysfunction isn't something you want to sing about, but you should talk to your doctor about it. I did, and so have millions of others. In fact, Viagra, also called Sildenafil Citrate, has already helped over 17 million men with ED. Ask your doctor if Viagra's right for you. America's most prescribed ED treatment, more satisfying sexual experiences with my partner. Now that's worth singing about.
Viva Viagra!
Ask your doctor if your heart is healthy enough for sex. Don't take Viagra if you take nitrates for chest pain, as it may cause an unsafe drop in blood pressure. Side effects may include headache, flushing, upset stomach, and abnormal vision. To avoid long-term injuries, stop taking Viagra and call your doctor right away if you experience a sudden decrease in vision or an erection lasting longer than 4 hours. Always remember to protect yourself and your partner against STDs.
To learn more, see our ad in Golf Magazine. Call 1-888-4-VIAGRA or visit Viagra.com today.
Aging in America is expensive, especially with people living longer, and many people have...
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media.
You believe that?
Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm glad you're listening. Whether you've tuned in to one of our fine affiliates like KRXA 540 in Monterey, KGOE 1480 in Eureka, the mighty KBBR in Coos Bay, Oregon, or the great 620 KPOJ in Portland, I'm glad you're listening. Got a lot of people listening on those little speakers on your computer, too. And if you go to peterbcollins.com, any day now we are going to debut our new upgraded podcasting system. So check that out. And for our far-flung audience, I hope that's an assist. Coming up next hour, Brad Friedman will give us an update on the fate of H.R. 811. That's the Holt bill that we've been talking about for months now. It started out with good intentions, but it's a mess. And it did not escape from the Rules Committee, so it is not on the House floor and is not subject to a full vote or amendments at this point. But Brad will have the update about an hour from now. David Kearns joins us on the program this hour. He is an adjunct clinical professor of pediatrics at Stanford University School of Medicine, and he's also affiliated with the Santa Clara Valley Medical Center in San Jose, where he was the chief medical officer for a number of years. And the Valley Medical Center, as far as I know, is one of the largest public health centers in California. Is that right, David?
Yeah, that is right, Peter.
Yeah. And he also is the author of a new novel. It's called Standard of Care. And in it, he airs out a lot of the issues that he confronts as a working medical professional in our corporatized, profit-seeking medical delivery system as it exists here in this country today. Why did you decide to use the novel form to express your views and your concerns about our healthcare system?
Well, you know, throughout my career, I had written academically and written, you know, academic books and textbooks, et cetera, and it addressed the U.S. healthcare crisis in a typical nonfiction way, writing opinion pieces, et cetera. I took a shot at it through fiction because I wanted to see if I could capture what the pressures are in our healthcare system as they happen on the ground in the lives of people.
What is it like to be a physician in America today? What is the emotional experience of being a physician in America today? What's it like to be in practice? What's it like to be a hospital executive? What's it like to be a nurse under the pressures of cost containment in this era of managed care? So I took a shot at doing this using fiction, using a fictional story, but it's very fact-based, and it certainly navigates all the territory of the difficulties in healthcare today, meaning the uninsured, meaning the huge expenses, meaning the problems hospitals are having making ends meet and not having enough nurses to take care of patients. So I took a character, a doc, made him a medical executive, put him in a good community hospital, and then I had that hospital taken over after he was there about a year by the largest, most predatory healthcare corporation in America.
I thought Tenet.
Well, that's close. The initials of the fictional corporation are OH. C.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that does sound a little bit like HCA,
mm-hmm.
which is the largest for-profit hospital corporation in the country. And
let's make the political connection. That's Bill Frist's family.
That is the Frist family business,
right.
Founded by the father and brother of Bill Frist.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, OHC is a fictional corporation. It just happens to sound a lot like HCA.
Yeah.
So my hero, a fellow named Dr. Dan Fazen, finds himself caught between his concerns about patients and their well-being and the pressures from the hospital corporation to earn profits for the shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really a microcosm for the healthcare crisis in America, the conflict between the interest of patients and the interest of big business.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way to salvage a for-profit healthcare delivery system in this country? I think it's a complete and utter failure. And I think that we need to move to single payer, universal healthcare coverage. The simplest way of explaining it is that we all ought to be covered by Medicare. And that would squeeze out the profit centers of the insurance companies, which is a huge one. It could help rein in the profit taking of pharma, the drug companies. And I think that given the efficiencies and, you know, the government delivery of healthcare is not perfect, but I have to believe that it would be much more effective and much more available to a broader population, if not the entire population, if we admit and move on from trying to make a profit in delivering healthcare.
Yes, I certainly agree with you about the insurance side. That's where we're hemorrhaging the most money, by having healthcare brokered by the private insurance industry. That brokerage is costing us $300 to $400 billion a year in the money that leaks out for administration and marketing and profit. I don't actually think it's necessary to nationalize the whole healthcare system. I think we could have private doctors. I think we could have private hospitals, although I think we have to address some of the profiteering of the large for-profit conglomerates. And obviously, we would have to do something about the profits in the pharmaceutical industry. Last year, Big Pharma, after taxes, made $40 billion in profits. They had a profit margin of 20%. The average Fortune 500 company has a profit margin of 5%.
And, so, you know, when I hear those numbers about pharma, it gives me an immediate case of restless leg syndrome.
There you go.
And I want that drug. Just to get my leg to settle down.
Yeah, where did that syndrome come from?
I am just boggled by that. When it first came on TV, I said, gosh, there's a cure, and I didn't even know there was a disease.
Right. And I'm a pediatrician, and of course, 100% of our patients have restless leg syndrome.
Well, it is amazing, and I'm trying to remember the statistic. I believe that over the last 10 years, pharma has spent $20 billion on direct advertising to consumers. And so when you link that to the profitability that you just cited, A lot of that is not primary health care. It's people who are trying to work on making themselves better or improving conditions, but it's not necessarily very vital.
Yeah, I think if you look at the budgets of pharmaceutical corporations, it's really very striking. While they talk about the necessity to charge a lot of money for drugs because they do the research and development, R&D, is only about 13% of their budget. They spend more on marketing. They certainly distribute more in profits. Now, I'm not opposed to capitalism. I'm not opposed to corporations making money.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we have to, in regard to the pharmaceutical corporations, and I think we could get to the insurance companies too, but in regard to the pharmaceutical corporations, we have to make a decision about is it okay to have that degree of profitability when we have 47 million people who aren't insured at all, right? Another 35 million who are underinsured. Our performance compared to the leading industrialized nations in the world is actually quite poor. And the lack of insurance is costly in lives. The Institute of Medicine tells us that the lack of insurance accounts for 18,000 deaths a year. That's a 9/11 every 2 months.
And so as we look at this picture, and we'll talk in detail more about some of these particular issues, the corporatization of hospitals and the impact that that has on doctors and other medical professionals. But as you look at the debate, do you see a way forward? Do you see any way to build consensus? Or are we going to just keep arguing about this as costs to continue to escalate? And when progressives propose policies, they will be described as socialist, and insurance companies will put millions of dollars behind propaganda campaigns to kill any effort to modify our system.
I think there's I have a sort of a pessimistic short-term view and a somewhat more optimistic long-term view. I think in the short term, there's no reason to believe that the insurance lobby and the pharmaceutical lobby won't continue to overwhelm legislators. The amount of money, the way campaigns are financed, it's just locked in at the moment. There are some experiments going on in states that show a little bit of hope. It's interesting, right? In California, one of the things that Schwarzenegger is pushing is to put a limit on insurance corporation profits in the program he's recommending. Now, that's probably not good enough to just go to Medicare for All, as going to Medicare for All. But Schwarzenegger is saying we want to limit profits to 15% from the insurance corporations right now, overhead mm-hmm. to 15%.
Currently, it's in the 30,
right now it's
35%.
25 to 30%.
Yeah.
Now, with a $2 trillion health care budget, mm-hmm. health care costs for the country,
mm-hmm.
The overhead expenses of private insurance are in the magnitude of $300 to $400 billion a year.
Right.
So if we can cut that in half, that'll pay for a lot of money to get health insurance. So there are some things to be hopeful about. But let me tell you why I have some long-term optimism.
Let me ask you to tell us about that after the break.
Yes, sir.
Dr. David Kearns is our guest. He is at Stanford University, also affiliated with the Valley Medical Center in San Jose, and the author of a new novel called Standard of Care. If you call with a question today and you're one of the first two callers, we'll give you a free copy of Dr. Kearns' book just for calling and joining us on the program. And he's willing to sign it for you, too. 888-5-PETER-B. If you have a question or a comment about our healthcare system and the crisis, give us a call now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More coming up straight ahead on the Peter B. Collins Show.
News, commentary, and your phone calls. If it's happening in America, it'll be right here on 540 AM Radio, KRXA.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
KRXA invites you to see No End in Sight, the powerful new documentary opening in Monterey this Friday, September 7th. Don't miss the film that Time Magazine calls, without question, the most important movie you're likely to see this year. Newsweek calls No End in Sight a powerhouse of a movie that should be required viewing for every member of Congress. And the New York Times calls it absolutely vital, exacting, enraging, and revelatory. No End in Sight opens this Friday at the Osseo Plaza 6.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Hello, everybody. Let's take a look at traffic on this Friday afternoon. Happy Friday, everybody. Yes, Friday. Okay. We're going to talk a little about San Bernardino County. San Juan Grade at Renton. We have an injury crash. Looks like four vehicles involved in this accident. The roadway is blocked at this point. We do have emergency crews on scene trying to help out with any injured folks here. In Hollister on eastbound 156 at Bixby Lane, several pieces of furniture in the lanes there. Cars apparently having to swerve around it. Santa Clara County eastbound 152 before Fifield. We have an accident. A big rig hit the mountainside and then collided with the center divide. The left lane blocked at this point. This report brought to you by Panasonic. Bring back family time. Panasonic wants to help you unite your family. See how you can win $20,000 worth of Panasonic high-definition product for your family. Learn more at Panasonic.com. That's traffic on KRXA.
Is the healthcare crisis giving you the blues? Johnny Guitar Watson sings it up for us here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Listen, I'm working 40 hours, 6 long days, and I'm highly embarrassed every time I get my pay. And they're working everybody, Lord, they're working poor folks to death. And when you pay your rent and your car note, you ain't got a damn thing left. Ain't that a bitch?
He didn't have room to mention the escalating cost of health care coverage.
We're talking with Dr. David Kearns, clinical professor of pediatrics at Stanford School of Medicine, also the former chief medical officer, but still affiliated at Santa Clara Valley Medical Center in San Jose, and the author of a new novel called Standard of Care. And we've got one more copy to give away if you call into the program this hour at 888-5-PETER-B. We're joined by Laird in Eureka, who's going to get a book. Hello, Laird. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. First of all, I want you to know that I did not rig this one.
Oh, good.
I didn't even know you were giving it away. I was talking to your producer.
No, you're not a mooch. You're just lucky.
Yeah, that's me. Okay, I'm getting Social Security. I'm 65. I started Medicare. They're taking out $100 a month. I have no idea what I'm getting for it. I went down to Social Security and asked. I got some gobbledygook and a book that told me, yeah, you're paying $100 here. It didn't tell me anything. And I still don't know. I mean, I don't get medical. I don't get optical or dental. I don't have a prescription plan yet. I guess I got to go get that separate.
I think the prescription plan qualifies you for a free donut hole from Krispy Kreme.
Hey, I need those.
And the opportunity to pay full tilt for your prescription drugs. So what's your general notion here, Laird? Do you think that the system is not working for you? Is that what you want to tell us?
I don't know. I'm lost. I went down to ask them, didn't get any answers. Where do I go? What am I getting? I don't understand.
David, where would you direct Laird to try to get his questions answered?
My advice, Laird, would probably be to go to the either the Social Security office or the Medicare office and actually have a face-to-face conversation with somebody. Often it's very, very difficult on the phone or online.
Okay, I went in person.
You did?
Yes, I went in person and spoke with the woman, and she gave me a booklet that supposedly gave me all my rights. But it really, your rights don't tell you what you get.
Well, I can tell you what you get for standard Medicare. Standard Medicare, or so-called Medicare Part A, is your hospitalization insurance. Now, there's also a Medicare Part B, and that pays for insurance to pay for your doctors. Now, I don't know what it was that the $100 that they deducted was, but perhaps you could clarify what that was. Maybe that was to pay your premium for Medicare Part B. But that's a specific question you need to ask, is whether you're covered for Medicare Part B. I can tell you by virtue of age and the fact that you've enrolled, you have hospitalization coverage already in Medicare Part A. You need to find out if that $100 paid for your premium for Medicare Part B. If it didn't, you need to talk to them about what you need to do to get Medicare Part B. And then finally, you need the consideration of Medicare Part D, the donut hole reference from Peter B. So those, I can't tell you necessarily the answers, but those are the questions you need to ask. Your next question is, do you have Medicare Part B, that is the physician insurance, and if not, what do you need to do to get it?
And when you go to the next meeting, take your cell phone and be sure to have Regis Philbin's phone number so you can call him with a lifeline question.
Yeah, why is this so complicated? I mean, they took the money, bam, told me they were taking it even before they took it. They take it every month, but the rest of it, it seems like you got to fight through all kinds of things to even find out where you're at. Why?
Well, there's no question that navigating healthcare is difficult. And in a way, I hate to say this, but I think in the Medicare minefield is actually less complicated than the private healthcare minefield with managed care.
And what's it like from the doctor's side? I mean, you're trying to deliver healthcare, and you've got to worry about all this insurance and billing and paperwork and qualifications?
Well, from the physician side, from the standpoint of the physician in the office, the physician in the office is drowning in paper and is hiring extra staff to take care of the paper, mostly related to managed care issues with private insurance, and that's raising the cost of health care.
Mm-hmm. We're going to pick up there as we continue with Dr. David Kearns. And if you have a question, join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. We have another copy of his novel, Standard of Care, to give to a caller. So join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Tourism Ireland. Discover your very own Ireland at discoverireland.com. I'm Charles Osgood. Depression is a disease, and when you consider it as such, according to a study by the World Health Organization that's published in the British medical journal Lancet, depression is a disease that is worse for you than chronic arthritis or angina or asthma or diabetes.
What we're trying to say is that being sad is bad for your health.
More from Somnath Chatterjee, the leader of the study, after I tell you about a place in Europe that would cheer anybody's spirits. It's just waiting to be discovered. Their breathtaking natural wonders leave even a seasoned traveler like me speechless. Ancient castles where you can live like a king, bustling cities where culture, fine dining, and vibrant nightlife meet. The place is Ireland. Don't be surprised. In Ireland, not a day goes by without something new being discovered. Discover your very own Ireland at discoverireland.com or call 1-800-SHAMROCK for your free Ireland vacation planner.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty good job, isn't it, when you think about it? I mean, basically, I help people save money, don't I? Like, I tell people they could save hundreds by switching to Geico. They go to geico.com, maybe save all this money on car insurance, and the next thing you know, I'm, like, invited to their wedding or whatever. One bloke actually asked me to be his best man. Dear, oh dear. Point is, if you want loads of friends, giving away money, it's not a bad idea.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The World Health Organization team, led by Somnath Chatterjee, analyzed WHO data collected from 60 different countries and 240,000 people and calculated the impact of different sicknesses by asking those suffering with these conditions questions about the effect on such things as their everyday lives, their ability to enjoy moving around, dealing with people, taking things in, and remembering. Depression is high on the list for debilitation, says Chatterjee.
Compared to chronic physical illnesses such as angina, arthritis, asthma, and diabetes, depression produces the most decline in health.
And sadly, in many cases, people have both depression and one of these other sicknesses. Depression is not just having a bad day.
This is not just feeling sort of listless or blue when you've, you know, broken up in a relationship. This is disturbed sleep, feeling suicidal, or not being able to eat, having low energy. So it is a very distinctive pattern of sadness.
And according to mental health experts like Britain's Marjorie Wallace, depression is growing to epidemic proportions.
It's predicted about 2020 is going to be the second greatest global burden of disease, next to heart disease and above cancer, and yet we still don't know what causes it.
Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of what you've just heard are available at theosgoodfile.com. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, your number one source for all your real estate needs, Jim Ross, president of National Real Estate Holdings, will be on. Jim has some incredible real estate investment opportunities that are perfect for the smart investor. That's this Sunday at 10 a.m. on Rock Roller Real Estate, now in its fifth year. You can also listen online at www.rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Welcome to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at noon on KRXA 540 AM. Your Solar Future is about the practical, the passion, and the politics of going solar. Listen to Your Solar Future, Saturdays at high noon. Go to YourSolarFuture.com. See the solar videos sent in by folks like you. Save thousands of dollars. Make money as well. You'll see when you go to YourSolarFuture.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 33 minutes after the hour, and we're talking about the health care crisis in this country with Dr. David Kearns. Play that for all our two-wheeled buddies out there. My friend Janine used to work as a nurse at the Heart-Lung Transplant Center there at Stanford, and they refer to motorcycles as donor cycles. David Kearns, have you heard that before?
I have not. And I thought I heard every bit of black humor that was left in healthcare, and I got to remember that.
Well, as the crow flies, up behind Stanford Hospital there is Skyline Boulevard. And that's a favorite spot for people who like to wind out their motorcycles. And according to my friend, that was a very likely location for a heart or lung donation.
Thank you, Peter. I'll use it in the next book.
His new novel is called Standard of Care. As we mentioned, David Kearns is a medical doctor, and he's a professor of pediatrics at Stanford University School of Medicine and is still affiliated with Valley Medical Center in San Jose, where he was formerly the chief medical officer. What was it like to make that transition from a regular doctor to an official, a guy who had to decide, you know, how the budgets get allocated and which departments have to cut back and, you know, all those critical business issues that you didn't learn a thing about in medical school?
Yeah, it was a growth experience, we'll say. Really care a lot about Valley Medical Center, the principal hospital I work in. And when I had the opportunity to experience a leadership role, I really welcomed it. It was a chance to do something that was more expansive, bigger than what I was doing within pediatrics only. And yeah, I had to learn a lot about the business of medicine and to some degree at that time, the politics of medicine, and the politics of how a county, operates and the sort of the big institutional relationships between a medical school and a county hospital. But I got a lot of help from, a person who you know, Bob Sullen, who was the executive director,
And let's just point out, Bob Sullen is now the court-appointed receiver of the medical care system in the entire California Department of Corrections. And he is one tough guy who is taking on one of the most intractable sets of issues. And I'm hoping that he'll be successful because we've had a lot of inmates die unnecessarily in the prison system in California in recent years.
Well, if anybody can do it, Bob can do it. He was chief executive officer when I became chief medical officer. And that was a great experience for me because he's just one of the most effective, savvy public service administrators I've ever met.
Mm-hmm. So what really opened your eyes when you made that transition from the guy with a stethoscope permanently affixed to the guy who was a suit sitting behind a desk making bean counter decisions?
Well, I think a couple of things. One had to do with the complexity of politics. Our particular medical center is actually a huge operation, about $500 million budget, and very complexly associated with the federal government, the state government, the county government. So the complexity of all that and the politics involved were difficult, challenging, at times a little bit shocking. And then the other part of it, which I actually approach a bit in my book, in the novel, is just how darn difficult it is to manage doctors. particularly surgeons. They're a handful.
Yes, they certainly are. Yeah. We'll just leave that there, and we won't even go for some lawyer jokes for balance right now. Mary Ann in Monterey, join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Dr. David Kearns.
Yeah, thank you. You know, one thing I rarely or hardly ever hear mentioned is if we all had health care and it was completely covered, it would put a massive amount of money back into our economy.
not only individuals, but businesses would have so much more.
Oh, Marianne, you must have missed the commercials from the insurance industry back during Hillary Care, the attempt by now Senator Clinton to reform things. You support socializing one-sixth of the American economy? That's one step away from communism, Marianne!
No. I mean, I think it's just basic to civilized human beings.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that every American citizen should have the right to health care?
Yeah, and I won't go there today, but education too.
Well, let's deal with this central point. Dr. Kearns, do you believe that every American citizen has a basic right to basic health care?
Yeah, for me, morally,
yeah,
that's a no-brainer. I think that everybody, it's one of those things that everybody's entitled to. And I consider it sort of like, you know, clean air, mm-hmm. clean water.
So part of the commons.
Part of the commons, mm-hmm. as old Tom Hartman always yep. says, part of the commons. Mm-hmm. About what Marianne said, something really important, and I want to maybe expand on it a little bit. She talked about how if we had universal health care, how this would be so incredibly healthy for our economy. The principal purchaser of this unbelievably expensive product in our society are employers.
Well, it used to be.
Still.
Yeah?
It's still. Now it's diminishing somewhat.
Right.
But employers are still the primary purchasers. It's being, you know, bled off onto individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But employers are the principal purchasers. So, for example, if we look at a big corporation like General Motors, the first $1,500 they receive on every car goes for health care premiums, both for their active workers and their retired workers.
Right.
The cost to Toyota, $200 per car. And we're competing with Toyota in a global marketplace. And that's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go all in, particularly in a globalized marketplace, you can go right across the economy, and all of American business is being crushed by the cost of health care. And if we had universal coverage, that could so dramatically energize the business economy of America. And that brings me all the way around to an earlier question, which was about why am I long-term optimistic? I'm long-term optimistic about real change in the healthcare system because I believe at some point there's a possibility that the lobbying influence of America's corporations collectively
mm-hmm.
will overpower the lobbying influence of just the insurance sector and the pharmaceutical sector.
Yeah. Marianne, thank you for a great comment.
Thank you.
Did we get your address? We want to send you a copy of the book.
Okay.
Did we get it?
Yeah, he did.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks again for the call today. 888-5-PETER-B if you'd like to talk with us. Dr. David Kearns with us for the remainder of this hour. Now, you just made a point that really resonates with me because I have been arguing for many years now that the next time Detroit comes to Washington for a bailout, like the Chrysler loan in the 1980s, that instead of giving them money, instead of relaxing the fuel standards or any other issue, we should give them universal, single-payer health care coverage and take that burden away. It's the last chance we have to rescue our manufacturing base and good, high-paying, middle-class jobs in this country. And that's the trade-off that I would like to see. Now, to your point about corporate influence being the ultimate tipping point or the source of the tipping point, I agree. And we're starting to see some progress there. There are full-page ads that have been running in California newspapers from corporate groups that are trying to get to the table. They recognize that a Republican governor named Schwarzenegger is pretty serious about extending health insurance coverage as far as he can in California, and that he wants to put the squeeze on various elements of the health care delivery system in order to do that. He's asking for sacrifice from virtually every sector, including consumers. And I think that we are starting to see the Chamber of Commerce mentality come around to see that their self-interest is aligning with the consumer self-interest finally.
Yeah, and the task force, the corporate task force that you're talking about in California, I believe is led by the CEO of Safeway. And he got a whole bunch of other corporations, big corporations like Pepsi and et cetera. But interestingly, in that aggregate of people, Aetna's at the table, Cigna's at the table.
Yeah.
The big insurance companies do not want to be left out. So that's going to be a real battle. It's also interesting that you just happened to mention Chrysler Corporation. By the way, I think that's to use a technical term, a really cool idea Chrysler Corporation goes to the feds. Feds say, okay, we're going to help you out. We're going to give Medicare to all your employees, mm-hmm. and we're going to take you off the hook for health care premiums. But it's interesting that you mention Chrysler because, as I'm sure you know, Mercedes-Benz just unloaded Chrysler Corporation for a song.
The Ransom of Red Chief.
For a song, for pennies,
yeah,
practically.
Take over our debt and we'll forget about it.
And the reason they did was for so-called legacy debt, which is the health care premiums and the pensions mm-hmm. of the retirees.
Right.
So that the cost of health care expense was so onerous that Mercedes gave up an entire automobile company mm-hmm. to get rid of it.
Yeah. Well, Uncle Charlie in Detroit's 86. He worked 35 years at Ford's, as it's known locally in Detroit, the family operation. And he said, yeah, they call every month to see if I'm still alive. They can't wait for me to kick off. But coming back to California and the Schwarzenegger effort, I give him credit as he has reinvented himself politically, because initially he led the charge to unravel SB2, which was the legacy of our John Burton, the former head of the state Senate. And Schwarzenegger helped repeal that. And so he has come around, and I give him credit, but Safeway led the charge when we had a grocery strike in Southern California. It's now 3 years ago. It was a watershed moment because the grocery chains banded together. They lost somewhere between $1 billion and $2 billion locking out their workers over very hard negotiations related to the who's going to pay for the health insurance. And the ultimate resolution was a loss to the workforce. And they ended up with a two-tier wage system that is very disadvantageous to newly hired employees. And they ended up having to shoulder an even greater share of the health care expense. And the point I would make is that if Safeway and its cronies in the grocery chain business had spent that $1 billion or $1.5 billion to improve coverage and to lobby in Sacramento and Washington to extend, expand, and improve health insurance coverage, that we would all be better off. And they played the boogeyman game where they said, well, we can't do this because Walmart's coming in and they don't offer benefits and they're not unionized and we can't compete with them, so we're going to take it out of the hides of our workers. And that, I think, is just so counterproductive and irrational that I hope they really will come around to the perspective that we've been talking about.
Yeah, and there's no question that it's the working class and the middle class that are getting hit. We learned last week that in the 2006 census that we just added 2.2 million people to the rolls of the uninsured. Of the 2.2 million that were added, 2 million were middle class and upper middle class. The people who are uninsured in America are working. It's not like deadbeats who don't have health insurance.
Right.
The people who don't have health insurance are people who are working and whose employers are dropping out of providing health insurance and putting these people at great, great risk. And right now, half the personal bankruptcies in America are due to medical debt.
Right. David Kearns with us on the Peter B. Collins Show. We take a break and return in just a moment. Check out his new novel. It's called Standard of Care, and David spells his last name K-E-R-N-S. You can find it out from Sentient Publications, and where can people purchase it, David?
They can get it on Amazon. They can get it on Barnes & Noble. They can get links to it on my website, which is www.davidkearns.com.
Very good. We'll be back in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
I found a Sunday school program for my children, one that has helped them develop their own system of beliefs and has taught them ethics and justice.
My partner and I were brought up in different faiths. The Unitarian Universalists welcome us both and honor our roots.
With so much division in our country, I founded a congregation where people with different beliefs could gather as one. Unitarian Universalists seek wisdom from all the world's religions.
We were so caught up in our careers. We needed a faith community to bring us back in touch with the important things in life. We joined the Unitarian Universalists.
Unitarian Universalists believe in respect, freedom, and justice for all people. Come visit our church in the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website at uucmp.org or call 624-7404.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Well, everybody, let's take a look at the very latest Happy Friday, and let's get to it. So we got a problem right now working in, let's see, they're saying this is in San Benito County, San Juan Grade at Renton. It's that four-vehicle crash I told you about in our last report. Still causing problems. It's blocking the roadway. Emergency crews on scene. Santa Clara County, eastbound 152 before Fifield. We have a big rig that hit the mountainside, then collided with the center divide. The left lane shut down at this point, and a big rig tow truck on scene along with CHP as well. Highway 1 from, looks like southbound between Carmel and Monterey. Moderate traffic being reported there as of right now. Some slow and go in some areas, I might add. Highway 17, no problems to report in either direction, so that certainly is good news. And this report is brought to you by 1-800-DONATE-HERITAGE for the blind.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with David Kearns, a medical doctor, and as we mentioned, he's affiliated with Stanford University and the Valley Medical Center in San Jose, and he wrote a novel that encapsulates many of his experiences in the changing medical care system. It's called Standard of Care, and if you go to David Kearns, KERNS.com, you can find out more about the doc and the book and links to purchase it if you're so inclined. So, David Kearns, as we look at this picture, we're heading into a campaign season, and we've seen the Democratic candidates for president take some pretty detailed positions. I particularly am impressed with Dennis Kucinich and also with John Edwards, who have both enumerated detailed plans and how they would pay for it. We get less specific information from Barack Obama, who does appear to be willing to leave the insurance companies in the game. And Senator Clinton, I have a general notion of what she wants to do, but again, I don't feel it's very well fleshed out, and I'm not clear on how she would pay for changes that she's proposing. So as you look at it, do you have a plan or a candidate who you prefer or you're willing to endorse at this point?
Well, I think I agree with your characterization of where the individuals stand. Kucinich is the only person who's actually full force behind Medicare for All, universal coverage, single payer. And I certainly endorse his approach, but as a realistic matter, I don't think Dennis Kucinich is going to get nominated to run for president. Of the others, I think Edwards has, and I agree with you, that Edwards has the most carefully thought out approach, which in a way is sort of a cafeteria plan that includes the option to have Medicare regardless of how old you are. So Edwards hasn't taken insurance out of the game. He's saying that there should be a menu, and some of that could even be what we have now, largely employer paid or with some, contributions by people themselves, and still maintain Medicaid for indigent and standard Medicare for elderly. I don't like that word now because I'm 63. I'm getting close. For seniors, seniors is a better word.
AARP members.
Right. But what's unique about the Edwards plan is that he is saying that anybody, regardless of age, could choose to be a Medicare recipient. And the satisfaction with Medicare in America is extraordinarily high. It is much higher than it is for people who are getting other forms of insurance, whether it's standard old-time Blue Cross type or whether it's HMOs. And he believes that if you make that part of an available menu, that more and more people will choose it, and America could gradually actually elect its way, I don't mean by political election, but mm-hmm. in terms of the choices of their health plan, America could gradually select its way towards single payer. So I like the Edwards plan. And I actually think it's a little difficult to get a handle, I agree with you, on both Obama and Clinton. I think what Hillary Clinton is basically saying, well, I did it before, and I know a lot about this, and I'm going to get there.
Yeah. The one thing I'll give Hillary Clinton credit for is that as long as Bill was in office, there remained a lingering threat that she or someone else might try to address health care reform, and it kept the increases in costs, both on the insurance and the delivery side, in single digits through most of the 90s.
Right.
And it was as the Clinton administration was winding down that we saw increases in double digits in the annual cost of health insurance, and then pretty much concomitantly in the delivery of those services as well. I want to ask you about S-CHIP, because as a pediatrician, I'm sure this is something very important to you. And for those who aren't familiar with it, S-CHIP is a program that is about to expire, and there is an extension and an expansion of the program that the House and Senate have proposed against a potential veto threat from the White House and some administrative game playing that the White House has proposed to limit the expansion of this program. It's intended for children, and this is seen by progressives as a first step to coverage for all, and it is seen as an incremental approach to the reforms that we're hoping for. What do you see in S-CHIP and in the battle over its extension and expansion?
Yeah, well, I've been kind of involved with it. This is a real wonky subject to talk about, but to try to simplify it, basically, what the Senate did was pass a bill by a veto-proof majority that would increase the funding for S-CHIP that would allow another roughly 3 million children to have health insurance. They're paying for it entirely with an elevation in cigarette tax. And of course, the tobacco companies are going crazy over that, as are the insurance companies, who feel that people will switch, and they're probably correct, from private insurance to S-CHIP. Now, what the House did was they passed a much more complicated bill that sort of put children up against seniors.
Yeah.
In a way that I don't think was politically very advisable. During the whole time, Bush is threatening a veto, and the shenanigans that you're talking about is Bush has, by administrative fiat, said that nobody's going to be able to expand S-CHIP unless everybody in Medicaid in the current S-CHIP is 95% enrolled. And in the history of entitlement programs, there's never been a program that came anywhere close to 95%. So the Congress is going to have to be very aggressive and actually not only pass SCHIP smartly, but they're also going to have to pass legislation that overcomes this administrative monkey business. Yeah.
Very well put. And nicely done with limited wonkness. We've had a lot of discussions about SCHIP, and I think it puts people to sleep, but it's a very important program and an important struggle that's underway right now.
I'm here to help. I'm here to de-wonk.
David Kearns, a real pleasure to meet you. Thanks for joining us today, and I want to recommend that people drop by your website, David Kearns, KERNS.com, and check out your novel, Standard of Care.
Thanks, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
Mine, too. Thanks a lot. Coming up next, we're going to work on election protection. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com returns to our program. There's a lot to talk about. Stay tuned.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. I'll have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. President Bush makes his first public comment on the new Osama bin Laden video.
The tape is a reminder about the dangerous world in which we live, and it is a reminder that we must work together to protect our peoples.
He spoke after a meeting with Japan's Prime Minister at the Asia-Pacific Summit in Sydney. U.S. intelligence analysts have concluded this is the voice of bin Laden in a message timed to coincide with the anniversary of 9/11 and apparently recorded recently. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr has details.
Al-Qaeda billed the 26-minute message as an address to America. But CBS News terrorism analyst Paul Kurtz says bin Laden is also sending a signal to his sympathizers.
He's alive and well, and he's up to date on what's happening in the world. So he's not necessarily living in some cave without broadband. He's connected. He knows what's going on. He's tuned in to current events.
Bin Laden makes no specific threats against America, but warns if the war drags on, Al-Qaeda will respond by continuing to escalate the killing and fighting against you.
Informed sources tell CBS News that U.S. intelligence believes bin Laden is hiding out under the protection of local tribes in the Chitral district of northern Pakistan. The White House's First Lady Laura Bush will have surgery tomorrow to relieve the pressure on pinched nerves in her neck. The pain kept her from accompanying the president on his trip to Australia. It was another one of those days on Wall Street. At the closing bell, the Dow was nearly 250 points lower at 13,113. The Nasdaq had lost 48 points. CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason says it was a reaction to a Labor Department report showing job losses for the first time in 4 years.
Unless these numbers are an aberration, which it doesn't look like they are, they're showing the economy is much weaker than we thought. And these numbers don't even reflect the full impact of the mortgage crisis, which has led to tens of thousands of layoffs.
With more to come, Countrywide Financial, a big mortgage lender, says it might have to cut 12,000 additional jobs. The case of 4-year-old Madeleine McCann, the British girl who disappeared during a vacation with her family in Portugal, took a surprising turn today when her mother and then her father were named as suspects. Martin Brunt of Sky News was at the police station this morning.
Kate McCann walked confidently into the police station for a second interrogation. Within an hour, her status had changed from witness to suspect. She'd been expecting it. The strong police theory is that Madeleine is dead, her body hidden, later moved and then hidden again.
Traces of the child's blood were found in a car the McCanns rented weeks after they reported Madeleine missing. Jerry McCann was named a suspect after being questioned separately by Portuguese police. This is CBS News.
We wanted to move in 90 days, and that was our goal.
Selling a home can be a challenge.
I've been through this type of market before. I'm going to be there every step of the way to guide them through it.
Realtors I work with know the markets that they're in.
They know how to market it. They know how to sell it.
Interest rates are at historic lows, which means more buyers are in the market for a home like yours. Every market's different. Call a Realtor today.
The market is always changing, and I'll always be ready for it.
Only Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hey folks, we're here today to see which mom can make the coolest Ready Whip sensation. Mom one is writing her children's initials on a bowl of strawberries. Mom two is drawing a Connect the Dots Ready Whip puppy dog using blueberries as dots. Excellent. And mom three has sculpted a Ready Whip hula dancer on a hollowed out pineapple. Cool, we have a winner. Ready Whip, real cream, real fun.
They're looking far and wide for Steve Fawcett. The search of the Nevada desert expanded again today to include 17,000 square miles. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman is on the story.
Search crews here continue to find wreckages, just not the one they are looking for.
We've found six previously unknown crash sites.
Cynthia Ryan is with the Nevada Civil Air Patrol. She says the six wreckages go back many years.
Some of them date back as far as, we believe, 1964. The most recent one dates back to the 1970s.
The search for Steve Fawcett continues, but this shows how difficult it might be to find him. These wreckages had never been spotted before. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Minden, Nevada.
Stunt flyers were practicing for an air show this weekend in Norfolk, Virginia, when a World War II vintage plane crashed at the Oceana Naval Air Station. The pilot and flight leader, Jan Wilberg, was killed. The six-member team had just finished its routine and was coming in for a landing. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
So, I'm driving downtown in my Buick, and I pass by this girl. She's got on those really big sunglasses all the celebs wear. So I'm thinking, someday, she's gonna regret looking like a bug. Real style is never just a flavor of the month. It's gotta last. Like my Buick. It looks and drives beautifully. And years from now, you can bet it won't be out of style. Especially because I take such good care of it. By taking it to the professionals at my Buick dealer. Down the Good Wrench service lane.
Can't stop thinking about it.
The other day, I asked for an oil change, four tire rotation, and Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection, performed by a GM-trained expert. So it's Good Wrench and Go to help keep my Buick running as great as it looks. And that's a picture I won't regret.
I can't stop thinking about it.
Fall is a great time to Good Wrench and Go for all your maintenance needs. See your local Buick Good Wrench dealer today or log on to GoodWrench.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Here at the Peter B. Collins Secret Studios, we have a massive electrified map of the United States of America, and we have been tracking the westward progress of his Bradness in the Bradmobile. I snuck a little GPS thing in there, and it appears to be lighting up the state of Nevada right now. So Brad is making progress and returning to Bradblog headquarters in Los Angeles. Hey, Brad.
Hey, how are you? You know, they would get very angry if you said Nevada out here.
Really? They say Nevada?
They do.
Yeah.
I've gotten in trouble. I've gone on the air in Nevada, called it Nevada, and while the phones lit up, and they hated me.
Huh. I'm kind of flexible on that.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, that's because you don't live here.
Right. Well, Brad, what a week it has been.
Oh, man. Unbelievable roller coaster of a week.
I mean, a week ago, you were mountain climbing in the Rockies, completely unplugged from the grid, and then you descended to, earthly elevations to find the Holt bill very much in play this week.
Yeah, and when I got back on the grid, I thought it was Tuesday or so. I thought, oh, boy, I hope we'll have something to talk about on Peter B. this Friday.
Well, why don't we start with a recap of where things are right now, and then we will kind of work backwards to the developments of the week.
Well, all right. Latest word I have is that the Holt bill, which was supposed to be heading to the floor either this week or next Monday, after going through the Rules Committee, as of this moment, it has, by and large, completely melted down. The hearing that was supposed to take place this morning in the Rules Committee did not happen. And now I am hearing a possibility of the bill that perhaps just won't die, coming back the 17th-ish of September. Now, what form it'll come back in at that point, or if it'll come back at all, is really anybody's guess. So that's where we are at the moment. But it was just an absolute meltdown this week over the last couple of days on Capitol Hill as this bill was headed for the floor, but once it got to the House Rules Committee, which is sort of the last stop for these bills before they go to the House floor,
right,
it fell apart. And it was quite unusual, actually, because this House Rules Committee is used to be referred to as the Speaker's Committee. It was actually presided over by the Speaker of the House. So a bill would not really even show up in the House Rules Committee in general unless the majority was good to go and ready to send this thing to the floor. And in the House Rules Committee, sort of that last stop, they decide what form the bill will take when it hits the floor. If amendments will be allowed, that would be called the open rule. If they would be restricted, meaning only certain amendments could be brought on the floor, that's called the restricted rule, and or whether it would be a closed rule, meaning no amendments to be allowed whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
It went into that rules committee, I think it was Wednesday, and everyone was talking closed rule. It was going, they had locked this thing down after so many contentious months and deal-making and compromising and everything else. But Susan Davis, our friend from San Diego, Congresswoman, came in at the last minute Wednesday and said, enough is enough. It's time to at least restrict the usage of DRE, direct recording electronic touchscreen voting systems, and she put in an amendment to do exactly that. Well, the House Rules Committee never even got to that amendment, frankly, because so many of the folks on in the majority on that Rules Committee could not agree to move this bill forward with all of the problems that are in it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it's interesting. And give us your sense, Brad Friedman, of where the resistance is coming from, because I know you and I have expressed resistance to the current form of the Holt bill. Mark Crispin Miller and many other leaders in the election integrity movement have done so. Yet at the same time, we have disappointing support for Holt from Common Cause, PFAW, and many of the grassroots type activist organizations in the country. But there are other factors, too. Secretaries of State, like our own Deborah Bowen from California, and election officials. All of these disparate groups are putting pressure to stop the Holt bill in for one reason or another.
Yeah, the resistance is really coming from all directions, and that's the problem. As you mentioned, there are some groups, People for the American Way, Common Cause, Move On, Verified Voting, they're supporting this bill, but many of those groups even have problems with the bill as it's currently written, so their support has been somewhat lukewarm, but yes, the National Association of Counties is currently against this bill, by and large, because they don't want the federal government at all telling them what sort of voting systems to use, restricting their use of touchscreen voting machines. Because even though this bill doesn't ban touchscreen voting machines, it does require that many states add paper, so-called paper trails to them. And then down the line, a few years from now, add a different sort of printing technology to them. They also, the counties don't like the audit provisions, I think. They don't want to be required to actually count anywhere from 3% to 10%. Of these either paper trails or paper ballots, depending on which system they're using. And then, of course, the Republicans don't want anybody to mess with, the privatized, the private corporations here, like Diebold and ES&S and Sequoia and so forth. And so They and the software industry have locked down virtually all of the originally good provisions that would have allowed some disclosure of the source code that is used on these voting machines. So they're getting, resistance everywhere, and unfortunately in the election integrity community, we're not united because some groups are in favor of this bill thinking, oh, it's the best we can do, so let's pass it anyway. And there's others, like myself, who say, no, we may end up doing more harm than good. We're not looking for a perfect bill here, but, you know, we don't want to make things worse. And as Holt is currently written, it will make things worse, I'm afraid.
Well, and the disagreements in the election integrity movement are significant. And, Brad, I've got an email here from Kathy Dopp directly attacking you.
Yeah.
This is an alert to give you a heads up so that you're forewarned that blogger Brad Friedman, and she missed the D, has been distorting the truth about the voter confidence, that's H.R. 811, for many months now. Friedman has been given, she spelled your name right the second time, significant mainstream media attention, even including appearances on CNN, despite the fact that he has not been presenting the facts truthfully. In the past, at Bradblog, they focused on one narrow, specific item that H.R. 11 does not do, banning DREs, and distorted by omission of any facts about what the bill does do, your impression of what the bill requires and does. Well, I won't read any more, but I'm sure you know the flavor of this.
Yeah.
And Kathy Dopp, I've seen a lot of her emails. She essentially has been an extension of Russ Holt's PR operation.
Yeah, she has. And interestingly enough, by the way, she used to be completely opposed to the Holt bill, to H.R. 811. Until they invited her in, and they were able, and she was able to get some input into the auditing provisions. I'm going to I'll stay away, as I actually always try to do, from the personal attacks here.
Mm-hmm.
Despite that email that you're reading, which was certainly a personal attack and a silly one, frankly, we've seen too many folks in the election integrity community who sort of take this tactic. I don't mind. I never mind people who disagree with me.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you disagree, call into the show. Let me know why you disagree. I'm all up for debate. That's what this entire thing is about, debate and democracy. But these silly attacks by just a very small faction of folks, Kathy has accused me of working for the voting machine companies, believe it or not. I think they might be surprised to hear that.
Yeah.
So it's silly and it's unfortunate. She's in favor of the bill for whatever reasons, and I welcome her to argue in favor of it. But to suggest that I'm fooling anyone and putting out it's hard to comment on it and still stay. Respectful, as I would like to.
Well, let me mention another email that I got from Kathy Dopp included an attachment or a link to a one-page summary of the current version of 811 as issued by the office of Rush Holt. And one of the first items up there said that H.R. 811 requires paper ballots from electronic voting machines. And this is a very important distinction between a paper record and the term ballot, because under the law, as you have helped educate me, Brad, the term ballot has many legal properties, and the term paper record does not have the same legal interpretation under many laws, including federal law. And so this is not an insignificant nuance. It's a very important detail. And this summary from Holt's office says that H.R. 811 requires a paper ballot. And I do not believe that is true.
It is not true. Here's sort of the catch-22 here. If this bill moves forward, Holt has changed the old version of his bill in previous Congresses referred to paper records. He did a find and replace, quite literally, to change paper record to paper ballot, or actually change the word record to ballot in the legislation. So now, you're actually, if this were to move forward, you are creating a new definition for the word ballot. And in this case, federal law would you know, say that a ballot was that little paper trail that comes off of those touchscreen machines, okay, fine. But what that means is, even with the audit provisions in the bill that require 3 to 10% of the so-called ballots to be counted, to be manually counted after the election, anywhere from 90 to 97% of the quote-unquote ballots of voters would never be counted by anyone or anything. You know, so if you want to call those ballots, fine. Do these folks agree that 90 to 97% of the voters' ballots should never be counted? So that, you know, that's why this is all quite misleading. A lot of trickery involved here. And going back to Kathy Dopp's note, I'll give her credit because she says in that note that, oh, I have been focusing on what she calls a narrow provision that would allow these DREs to create paper trails. She used to say that the Holt bill would outlaw DREs and force everyone to go to op-scan paper ballots. That's just completely not true. So, you know, she's modifying her language a bit. The bottom line is she is still wrong. And if you actually read the legislation, you'll see that she's still wrong. We're not talking about, paper ballots in this legislation. We're talking about institutionalizing and allowing for the continued use of touchscreen voting machines, which are hackable and unreliable, period.
We're going to take a break and return with Brad Friedman. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with us this hour. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. And when we return, I want to get the details on the proposed Davis Amendment, if any of this ever gets through the Rules Committee. That's straight ahead, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
KRXA invites you to see No End in Sight, the powerful new documentary opening in Monterey this Friday, September 7th. Don't miss the film that Time Magazine calls, without question, the most important movie you're likely to see this year. Newsweek calls No End in Sight a powerhouse of a movie that should be required viewing for every member of Congress. And the New York Times calls it absolutely vital, exacting, enraging, and revelatory. No End in Sight opens this Friday at the Osseo Plaza 6.
Did you know that the average price for homes in North Monterey County is approximately $450 per square foot? Hi, I'm Anthony Castellino for Pacific Pride Homes. We really do take pride in the small number of custom homes we build every year, and the fact that we can offer state quality homes at substantially below that price. Our most recent accomplishment is located in the gated community of Hidden Woods. Conveniently located in the Sunbelt area of North Monterey County and within a short drive to Morgan Hill, Salinas, and Monterey Peninsula, this new 4-bedroom, 3.5-bath home sits on 1.65 private acres. We invite KRXA listeners to a special open house viewing on Sunday, September 9th, between 1 and 4. Stop by and you'll be amazed at the value of this beautiful new home. Visit our website at pacificpridehomes.com for details and directions.
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the Tasty Planet Show, every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., and I want to tell you about my experiences with Monterey Salinas Transit's Bus 55. I personally have taken the bus a couple of times to fly out of the San Jose Airport. What a great way to spend $8 and avoid the headaches of driving, parking, driving, and messing with the San Jose commute. Check out Bus 55 at www.mst.org. I know it works. Bus 55, Monterey to San Jose, runs three times a day. It works.
Hey, everybody, let's take a look at the latest Happy Friday. Let's get to it. And yes, indeed, thank goodness it is Friday. I want to tell folks a little about what's happening right now. And looks like we have a problem in Santa Clara County that we continue to tell you about. It is a crash involving a big rig that 152 eastbound before Fifield. The big rig hit the mountainside. It collided with the center divide as well. Left lane remains blocked, and for some reason they're still waiting for a big rig tow truck to arrive on scene. In Gonzales, northbound 101, right at just about, they're saying this is at Fifth Street. We have an accident to be reported there. It's a solo vehicle hit the center divide. Capitola, northbound 1 after 41st Avenue. Plywood in the left lane. Slow traffic being reported southbound 1 between Monterey and Carmel. Toyota owners, visit your genuine Toyota service center now and enter to win 1 year free of gas. No purchase necessary.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. 24 minutes after the hour, it's our weekly visit with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And you can call into the program, Elvis or anybody else, at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And, Brad, if you would, I'd like you to describe for us what is in the proposed amendment to the Holt bill that Susan Davis, the Democrat from San Diego, would offer on the floor if the Rules Committee, A, permits amendments, and B, permits the Holt bill to go to the floor.
Smartly done, Peter. It would, the Susan Davis amendment, which, by the way, has now been joined with at least two co-sponsors as of, late last night. Barbara Lee of California and Maurice Hinchey of New York have both come on as co-sponsors to this amendment. What it would do is akin to what Deborah Bowen did out in California. It would restrict the use of DREs to no more than one per precinct on election day. However, it would allow them to continue to be used for early elections, for early voting, and it does not currently in any case. Mind you, this is all a draft version that I've seen, and it could change, but it would also not require what Bowen is currently requiring for those systems, which is a 100% manual count of those paper trails. Currently, there's nothing in her amendment that would require any mandatory audit of those paper trails. So it's not real strong in that sense. And, oh, by the way, as written right now, it wouldn't require any of this until 2012. That's sort of the downside. Let me give you the upside, which is a statement that Susan Davis put out describing the issue of whether or not to allow these DRE voting systems at all, touchscreen voting systems. She describes that as the 800-pound gorilla in the room that no one in Congress has until now been willing to talk about, you know, whether these things should be banned entirely. So with her amendment, I think it puts the idea of a DRE ban on the table, and then with the editorial that night or the next morning, actually, from the New York Times, I think it puts it smack on everyone's dinner plate.
Well, just before we get to the New York Times, would you mind just placing the phone near your butt? Because I would like to kiss your ass.
Oh, thank you. Please do.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos.
One of the biggest benefits for us are the relationships that we establish with our customers. Our customers have said that they love coming to our place because we have great stuff and great prices.
The thing that makes us unique is the mix of things. It's a very eclectic mix. We've become a destination for a lot of people. They'll bring friends out. They'll do little mini tour buses and bring friends. So we really, really appreciate that. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. We have everything from French soaps to linens to wall hangings.
And it's gotten to the point where people think of us when they need a gift. It's not just a utilitarian purchase or frivolous, but they make us a regular stop when they need a gift.
We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by, have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the secret garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
It is useless to resist us.
Which makes us irresistible in so many cases. I'm Peter B. Collins. You can join us with Brad Friedman. He's here for another 30 minutes. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. This just in Tennessee, the cost of crack is going down because the state's crack tax has been ruled illegal. Because crack is illegal. All right. Coming up before the end of the hour, we're going to get an update from Aldous Tyler at Nonstop Radio about the efforts to keep progressive talk on the air in San Diego. They're doing a very interesting effort this weekend, and we'll tell you about it. Brad Friedman with us, and we're joined by Chris in Salinas, who helps thicken the plot regarding the Holt Bill, the Rules Committee, and enter Elliot Spitzer. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I received an email from Mark Crispin Miller this afternoon, and he says that they're working some backroom deals with Elliot Spitzer so they can keep their lever machines through 2010, I believe.
Spitzer's the governor of New York.
They're going to bring over some Republicans to support the Holt bill as written without amendments.
Brad, have you had a chance to see that?
I have heard some buzz about it, and I've got Mark's email actually right here.
Mm-hmm.
They have, they're still using lever machines in New York, and this would mean they'd have to get rid of them immediately, and they have been getting waivers basically from the Department of Justice now for years as they've been fighting about what new voting system to move to. So Slaughter is the head. Louise Slaughter is the chair of that rules committee, and the buzz that Chris is talking about is that she's out there brokering a deal to essentially give them a waiver against Holt, the H.R. 811 provisions that would require them to get rid of those machines immediately.
And Slaughter is an interesting woman. Yep. She's a progressive. She's from Buffalo, and she has a southern accent.
Okay. Fair enough.
Hold on, Chris. Go ahead, Brad.
Well, I should add that I have not personally been able to confirm that. We'll call it a rumor for now, but it could well be the case. And if she does have the power to come in there as chairman and ram that thing through the Rules Committee and get it out to the House floor.
Go ahead, Chris.
As far as the New York Times, they also wrote that, yeah, let's ban DREs, but they want to keep OptiScan in place. And without any sort of, security, OptiScan is as bad or worse than the DRE. So what are we going to do to keep computerized voting systems out of our election process? That's what needs to be done.
Chris, I'd offer one minor disagreement, and that is I don't think that op scans are perfect or totally secure, but the benefit is that at least with an optical scan, there was a paper ballot that was scanned through it that survives the process and can be counted or recounted if there is a dispute in that election. Brad, what's your view?
Yeah, no, I agree exactly. It's not a matter of Chris had said that they are as bad or worse. They're not, because you do have a record of the voter's intent, a record that you know actually was created by the voter. And whether the OptiScan machine works or not, we can all go back to those ballots, and that's going to be a continued fight.
But that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
On the audits, though, and trying to go back after the fact is just going to be just as problematic as having a VPAT. Trying to go back and doing both.
Not just as problematic. And I completely understand what you're saying here. And that's why you've got to get it right on election night. And I have often said, look, let's just get a paper ballot, period, and then let's continue the fight about how to count those things. But when you go to a DRE with a voter-verified paper audit trail, VVPAT, there is no record, period, anywhere of the voter's intent. And that is a huge difference. That is a sea change of a difference between what you do get with an optical scan paper ballot system.
Well, one quick thing, and I'll let you guys go here. I think that what they're doing with the Holt bill, if they were to pass a DRE ban and allow They need to put the 100% back in, like in California here, but they also need to sunset it and make it after 2008 election and then go all the way back to the drawing board and start over.
Well, sounds good to me. But, you know, as you said, we need to get the, you know, we have to stop the computerized voting. It's not a matter of stopping it. It's here. It's a matter of getting it, you know, back into the hands of the people. And that's, I think everyone is looking for a silver bullet. I don't think there is going to be one.
Hand-counted paper ballots is a silver bullet.
What's that?
Hand-counted paper ballots at the precinct is the silver bullet.
Well, you know, it sounds good to me. But, you know, I'm not king of the country yet, and until such time, it is a democracy, and we do have to move it through somehow through the legislative process. It sounds well and good to all yell and scream for hand-counted paper ballots, and I'd be in favor of that, but is that going to happen right now? No. This is going to be a process. The path is laid one stone at a time here, and we are, I think, successfully laying some stones here, but it's going to be a long path, unfortunately.
Well, that's why I say we should sunset the Holt bill so we can revisit it.
Sounds good to
anyway,
me, Chris.
Thanks for the good work, man.
Okay, right, and Chris, thank you for your advocacy there and your activism. And this is the first time I've heard somebody suggest a sunset. I'll think about it, but on the face of it, that's a way out. Of course, the problem we have is that promises to revisit controversial issues by our elected leaders often are just left unfulfilled.
That's right. Even in the Help America Vote Act, so-called HAVA of 2002, there was a provision to sunset the Election Assistance Commission that was, you know, four appointed presidential appointees who were supposed to oversee this entire situation. They're supposed to be sunsetted by, I think it was 2007. Well, they ain't going anywhere from as far as I can tell. And by the way, I just, for the first time over the past few days, was able to find the signing statement that George W. Bush included with the Help America Vote Act for the first time. And he says that though Congress you know, may recommend the four chairs of the Elections Assistance Commission, the EAC, he, as president, has no responsibility to listen to them because that would be a shot at his presidential, his executive powers. He can appoint anybody he wants and do anything he wants, according to his signing statement on the Help America Vote Act. So putting a legislation in place which has such enormous problems and hoping that a sunset is going to take care of it, it might be better than nothing, but I think we can do better than that.
Well, I have no confidence in Republicans like Arlen Specter, who voted for the Military Commissions Act, which removed habeas corpus for detainees. He said that he would wait for the courts to fix it or that he would try to amend it. Neither is in the offing. And likewise, I'm skeptical of the Democrats, who caved and passed this legalization of the NSA spying program, complete with amnesty for officials who intentionally broke the law, and they put a six-month limit on that. You know, I don't have confidence that in 6 months, whatever product they come up with will be any better than the crap that they pumped out so far.
Hey, right. That's not leadership.
No.
You know, that's fear. That's legislating through fear and not knowing what to do. We need some leaders out there. We need folks to say, look, this is the right thing. Banning touchscreen voting is the right thing. Insisting on a paper ballot for every vote cast in America is the right thing. If we can get that far, then I'll start calling for you know, leaders to step forward to say, let's hand count every damn one of those paper ballots.
Harvey in Eureka, you're next. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with his Bradness.
Yeah, okay. Well, I remember that there was a relatively inexpensive alternative for the handicapped that could be used by the handicapped to cast their vote. I don't know anything about the details, but I remember that the old Secretary of State outlawed it, ruled that it couldn't be used. And you see, if that machine, that device, could be used, then you could outlaw DREs completely because you'd have an alternative means for the handicapped to cast their vote.
You're talking about the vote pad, and there's another similar system to it, which is a tactile ballot a sort of a sleeve that you put the ballot in and that blind folks and so forth can use to cast their vote. And you're right. Bruce McPherson, the former Secretary of State, torpedoed it. It should be revisited in California. Bowen should give it another look. But we already have systems that do provide independent private options for disabled voters, one of them being the AutoMark. And that is a touchscreen system. But unlike a direct recording electronic device, it doesn't record the vote inside the machine. It actually prints out a ballot that can then be counted by another means, whether by hand or op scan and so forth. So the options exist. The disabled voter thing is a complete canard, because even Deborah Bowen found she did an accessibility study of the existing DRE voting systems and found that none of them met the accessibility standards mandated by federal law. So that's just a phony baloney argument that was pushed forward by the voting machine companies in order for them to make billions of money in taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, well, then if we could stifle their efforts to put this DRE over, then they would have no grounds to insist on the DREs at all, and we could get rid of them completely.
That's what, we already can. There's already plenty of options for disabled voters. We don't need DREs. We can ban them tomorrow and have perfectly successful elections that would allow disabled voters to vote privately and independently.
Well, then why isn't there, in this amendment you were speaking of, why wasn't there a stipulation that no DREs could be used? Why do they leave this loophole?
Well, I think in this case, and I, by the way, I agree. I wish that there was no loophole, but in this case, it's a baby step, so to speak. And even, you know, Deborah Bowen, with her top-to-bottom review and all the findings and problems she discovered with these DREs, even she allowed one per precinct, though she did add that 100% manual paper trail count provision to it. But these people have to have elections, and I think Deborah Bowen was thinking, well, look, I'm going to face a lot of opposition from elections officials and so forth. I need to sort of throw them a bone to give them something to marginally meet the disabled voter provisions. So she's done that, but I think that could very well change in the future as we move forward.
I think we should challenge it, and thanks a lot.
Harvey, thank you, Harvey.
Thank you. Good to hear from you today. Just want to lift one more paragraph here from the New York Times editorial. It is groundbreaking and published this week. And, Brad, it's fair to say that the Times has not been out front leading the charge to deal with these issues.
You're very kind to put it that way, yeah.
It reads, "Electronic voting has been an abysmal failure. Computer experts have done study after study showing that electronic voting machines, which are often shoddily made, can easily be hacked. With little effort, vote totals can be changed and elections stolen. In many recent elections, voters have complained of vote flipping, in which touchscreen machines take votes cast for one candidate and give them to an opponent." Really nice to see that at the Gray Lady, they've started to figure out how serious this problem is and that the fix is achievable.
And, because they call for, they say that some have called for putting a solution off until 2012, and the New York Times says that is too long to wait. I couldn't agree more, and problems with the Senate bill from Dianne Feinstein and the Holt bill both put off a lot of this until 2010, 2012. No, we need a solution for 2008. It's easily done. As long as they throw out their fantasies that they're going to continue using this just crappy touchscreen voting technology that doesn't work.
We're going to take a break and return to more of your phone calls. 888-5 Peter B puts you through to Brad Friedman and your humble host on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays.
Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs, and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
Hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and it is a happy Friday, to say the least. San Juan Bautista, San Justo Road at Prescott Road. We have an injury crash. A motorcycle went into a ditch. The rider landed in a field. We do have paramedics and fire department crews on the way to the scene there, as you might imagine. Del Monte Force, Midway Lane at Sonato. We do have a problem there. It is a looks like some sort of, what are they saying here? It looks like it's a grass fire. It's burning in the area that may have been caused by a down power line. And we do have a fire department unit on scene there handling that situation. Also want to take a look at another problem being reported. And it is, let's see, they're saying this is in northbound 17 for the Cats, a crash being reported, although it is off to the right-hand shoulder. Aptos, southbound 1 at State Park, there's a baby stroller in the lanes.
Minutes in front of the hour, we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We'll pick up our election protection issues in just a moment, but something that Brad and I have both been working on is to preserve progressive talk radio in San Diego, where KLSD is threatened with a format change. And our main man to try to protect and expand progressive talk radio in this country hails from Madison, Wisconsin. It's Aldous Tyler. Aldous, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Peter. How's it going?
And say hello to his Bradness, too.
Brad. Hey, Aldous. How are you, brother? You're doing a great job out there.
So,
Thank you, sir.
Aldous, tell us about the plans for this weekend. It's an interesting effort called a boycott.
Exactly. Basically, instead of, you know, normally when you're not happy with something, you might boycott the sponsors. This is the opposite. We're saying San Diego is happy with KLSD's sponsors, so they're going to buy from them, and they're going to buy as much as they can, and to make sure that the sponsors understand why this sudden upsurge in their prosperity is happening, the people who are doing it are going to be laying down little flyers that say, you are a sponsor on KLSD. We love progressive talk on KLSD. We are here because you sponsor progressive talk on KLSD. Help us keep it there, and you will help keep our sales coming in.
This is a brilliant maneuver.
Well, right. You know, it's one of those things where this is commercial progressive talk. This is not public public television or radio.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something like that. This is where these sponsors are a part of the community. They're actually drawn in to become a part of the progressive cause by actually donating their hard-earned cash so that the people who are progressives, who happen to buy cars, clothes, peanut butter. I think you buy peanut butter, don't you, Peter?
Yes, I do.
So point being, if you're a grocer, you're going to want to advertise on Progressive Talk. Even in a town like San Diego, you can count on at least 45 to 50% people who will identify themselves as or Democrat or liberal when it comes time to voting. That's a large audience block.
Aldous, I'm just a little unnerved. How did you know about my GIF habit?
Peter, I can smell from here. But here's just one thing I wanted to get out to the listening audience, because there are a few times I've actually heard, even from progressives and liberals, that, you know, well, maybe progressive talk radio isn't that important, you know, and here's where I really just want to press on you guys about this. Think about this. I'm standing here in Wisconsin on my cell phone right now being broadcast live to tons and tons of listeners and streamed probably and podcast. And the fact is what other means do we as liberals and progressives have to get the truth out like that fast, to get information that can't be gotten any other way?
Mm-hmm. No, it's vital, and it's really important. We're at a critical stage, and I really hope that people will rally. And if you're within the sound of my voice and you can get to San Diego this weekend, help support this effort. And are details up at the Nonstop Radio page for San Diego?
That's correct. You go to nonstopradio.com, and San Diego's got several links on the main page. Click any of them, you'll get to the San Diego page. And there is also saveklsd.com if you want to go direct there. But, you know, if you go to Nonstop Radio, you also find out how you can help Memphis, which just lost their station, without any warning at all. And I'm also going to be posting about Honolulu, which is currently under threat.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's raining, but you know what? We can make sure that we get as many people through the storm as possible. And for those that do lose them, like Memphis, we're going to help them organize and get another station back on to Progressive Talk as soon as possible.
Say all this, Brad here. Stay in touch, because I should be back in Los Angeles pretty soon. I've been working on an effort sort of behind the scenes to help out with what's going on in San Diego. Love to talk to you about it. Always something up my sleeve. So let's talk about that soon.
I'm gonna get Peter one quick first heard publicly news here. I've had a lot of people asking about how to get together so that people can share their ideas on how best to promote Progressive Talk, and so we're looking to see what's going to take to have a meeting maybe in a year from now, on just that subject. So keep your ears peeled. Go to nonstopradio.com for details. They'll be posted as soon as we have them.
Beautiful, Aldous. Keep it up.
All right. Thank you, Peter.
Okay. Great to talk to you today.
And thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Aldous.
Okay. And Stephen Salinas joins us next. Hello, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. Real quick, I probably said this before, but about these voting machines for the handicap, it just seems to me absurd, because we had a recent election in Monterey County, and I voted with a paper ballot, and it took me 30 seconds to connect my arrows. And then I watched other people come in and use the machines. And it was amazing. None of these people were handicapped, but at least half of them took their thing they had to plug in, went over the machine, and then went back to ask instructions on how to use the machine.
It's ridiculous. It's a scam. There's a reason that Diebold gave the National Federation for the Blind $1 million. That was a money well spent by Diebold.
Okay, I just wanted to let you know that.
All right. Steve, anything else?
That should do it, I think.
Okay, appreciate the call. And, Brad, I just got this story in today. A federal judge upheld a Georgia law requiring voters to show photo ID, clearing the way for enforcement at local elections as soon as this month, September 18th.
Yeah, I saw that headline, too. Haven't been able to look into the details. I'm going to look forward to doing that once I finally get in one place here. But, your election system is under attack from all sides, and that's why we have to be vigilant. And as I mentioned before about silver bullets, there are none. This is a long process, and I think I certainly have learned throughout this process what it means to have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. We, the people, need to keep an eye on our system and stay vigilant for a very long time. There's no silver bullet. This is we need to oversee the system. And that's what the fight is right now with the election reform, to keep it transparent so that the people can oversee the system.
Yeah.
And by the way, real quick, I know we're against the clock here.
Got a minute. Go ahead.
Out of your home state of Ohio today, just posted this top of bradblog.com right now. Cuyahoga County official commissioner out there says, we should sue Diebold. He announced it at a meeting after it turns out that the technical assistance budget for their 2006 elections in Cuyahoga County exceeded the $1.9 million that they allocated by $6.9 million.
And that's the price tag. It's priceless to steal an election.
That's it's not cheap.
Brad, I just want to invite you, if anything breaks on the Holt bill over the coming week, before you join us again, as usual, at the end of the week, please flash me an alert or give us a call. And we want to keep tabs on this and keep our listeners well informed and as active as possible.
Should be an interesting week. I'll be happy to do that, my friend.
All right, Brad. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, brother. From Los Angeles next time, I think.
I hope so. They're waiting for you there. With a warrant and a whole welcome committee. Thank you, Brad.
All righty.
Happy trails to you.
I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for listening. Drop me an email, pro or con, peter@peterbcollins.com or fullofit@peterbcollins.com. Talk to you soon.
Keep smiling until then.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from 12-Step Talk Uncensored. Saturdays from 4 to 5 p.m., listen as we deal with life-changing issues that affect all of us. Our fears, passions, anger, addictions, the law of attraction, and how we change ourselves so we can live an extraordinary life. Join me, Sheila Gale, along with Ava, as we share tools for change that work. 12-Step Talk Uncensored, Life 105, Saturdays 4 to 5, brought to you by Sun Street Centers, with education, prevention, and treatment for alcohol and drug addiction.
This week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate, your number one source for all your real estate needs, Jim Ross, president of National Real Estate Holdings, will be on. Jim has some incredible real estate investment opportunities that are perfect for the smart investor. That's this Sunday at 10 a.m. on Rock Rollin' Real Estate, now in its fifth year. You can also listen online at www.rockrollinrealestate.com. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. It's 26 minutes of Osama bin Laden, his first videotaped message in nearly 3 years, time to coincide with the sixth anniversary of the attack on America. President Bush at the Asia-Pacific Summit in Australia has made his first public comment. We get a live report from CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer.
Bill, even as intel analysts scrutinize this video, President Bush has his own read.
The tape is a reminder about the dangerous world in which we live.
Mr. Bush folds the latest bin Laden message, especially the al-Qaeda leader's mention of Iraq, into his own case for staying the course on war strategy. He says it shows al-Qaeda wants a safe haven in Iraq. The president will elaborate on that in next week's Iraq War Status Report. Live in Sydney, Peter Mayer, CBS News.
In his speech, bin Laden makes reference to recent events and indicating it was recorded recently. He tells Americans al-Qaeda will keep fighting in Iraq until they force the government to end the war by embracing Islam. Not guilty on all counts. That's the verdict of the trial of New Orleans nursing home owners Mabel and Sal Mangano. They were charged with negligent homicide in the deaths of 35 patients who drowned when St. Rita's nursing home was engulfed by Hurricane Katrina's storm surge. Prosecutors said the Manganos should have evacuated everyone, but the jury accepted defense arguments that the owners trusted the New Orleans levees. If they hadn't broken, everyone would have been safe. Financial help for many college students is on the way. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports Congress approved a major overhaul today.
Though President Bush initially threatened to veto this big expansion in college aid, he now says he'll sign the measure that keeps a Democratic campaign promise. Over the next 4 years, it would boost Pell Grants and cut student loan interest rates in half, down to 3.4%. House Democratic leader Steny Hoyer.
This is an historic day for the millions of hardworking Americans who want to send their sons and daughters to college.
It caps student loan payments depending on income and forgives loans altogether for graduates who spend 10 years in teaching, firefighting, and other public service jobs. And it pays for it all by cutting $20 billion in subsidies now paid to banks that make student loans. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Doris Anderson, 76 years old, disappeared during a hunting trip with her husband in the mountains of eastern Oregon. After 2 weeks, searchers had just about given up hope, but then they found her alive. Cor Harlan of CBS Television.